Tomorrow's news today.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Friday morning. It is the 29th of May, 2026. We got a big show for you today. I'm going to be joined by two very big guests, Tiffany Cianci and Mary Tally Bowden. She's come out with a new book that Barnes & Noble has decided should be banned. It's one of their banned books, not the banned books that you see in the front of the store in the big display that says banned books with rainbows and it's like To Kill a Mockingbird and the rest of the eighth grade reading list. No, this is a real banned book. It's actually a book that has now been banned. So we're going to talk to her about what's contained in that dangerous tome. And then Tiffany Cianci has some breaking news for us with some action that is required of you if you don't want to see your future sold out to the lowest bidder once again. Talking about the way that retirement funds, pension funds, and your savings accounts are being managed without your approval or even knowledge in certain cases by private equity firms that are selling out your future to the lowest bidder out there so that they can basically America is being foreclosed on is how you can think of it. Like America, it's like a corporation that has sort of run its race and it's time to shutter it. We're basically being Bain capitaled, right? They're coming in, they're stripping it for parts, and they'll, you know, leave it a disfigured mess at the end of it. It's what they're doing to America and your savings accounts and your future, unless you feel like stopping them. And Tiffany Cianci will be joining us to explain how we can stop them. And we'll do our best to do just that. We've got a lot of videos to go to. I kind of want to go, we just ran out of time, but it's going to be a little bit of an I told you show. Okay, this is a running joke on War Room and was on American Journal, that we're the We Told You show. And it's not, again, about just patting ourselves on the back. It's about recognizing that all of this information that people are waking up to now, that we're all suddenly realizing together all of a sudden, it's all been available to you for the last several decades. In many cases, like we're going to show a video from 16 years ago of Alex Jones talking about plastic-lined paper cups and estrogen mimickers and all of the things that are now very, you know, hot topics and, you know, fun to talk about with, like, crunchy moms on Instagram. It's all been well-known by us forever. And the reason that we've been able to be so ahead of the curve on things, it's not because we're super special. It's not because we're smarter than everybody else. It's because we are just looking at what the elite are actually saying and what they're actually doing to us and have been reporting it for literally decades. So again, it's not about just like patting ourselves on the back. It's about using the pattern of the past to determine the future and seeing that we have been on the money about all of this stuff because our, you know, foundational premise is correct, that there are forces working in secret to create globalism, which is a system of planetary enslavement. And they're doing it first and foremost by waging chemical and physical war against you by weakening your body and mind in tandem so that you can be taken advantage of in the future. That's the starting premise. Everything else becomes obvious as soon as you accept that reality and accept that you have a obligation to fight back against it. They're not asking you for permission. They're just doing it, and you just have to stop them. It's the Alex Jones Show. Stay with us, folks.
thanks for having me. Before I start, wanted to pitch a couple of the products there for the listeners. The bovine colostrum's been fantastic. My mom had tremendous results, similar to the results your mom had with her hair and skin. Methylene blue, the mental clarity, the focus has been amazing. I just found that I just needed to up the dose a little bit from the recommendation, and then that really hit. So definitely helps to support the broadcast. Alex, the reason you're so successful and the reason so many people chime in is because you have the best guests. That does include Victor Boot, but I will reference the legendary Gerald Celente. What does he say time after time? When there's nothing left, they take us to war.
The bovine colostrum is incredible. The methylene blue, you fund us. You're our funders, not the Israelis or the Muslims or the Russians or the U.S. government. You fund us at thealexjonesstore.com. And the new news site for all the feeds and articles is alexjoneslive.com. And on Rumble, rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShow Live. We'll be right back.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today, although we'll be playing some clips of his as we remind everybody that as long as you have the foundational premise about globalism correct, you can sort of just almost have a super power. You have a super vision. You have X-ray vision like Superman and can see right through the headlines to what's really going on. And we've been doing this for decades and the story hasn't changed. It's been the same attack the entire time. I've talked about it before. The famous Alex Jones rant about Magellan, and Justin Bieber. And, you know, people point to that because it's, you know, obviously very inspiring. It's a great rant on its own. But people forget that the whole premise of that rant was that they were driving, you know, kids to admire people like Justin Bieber so they could then turn around and use Justin Bieber to push carbon credits on them and go after climate change. This was in like 2012. Nobody recognized at that point the threat that climate change truly was beyond just being a silly environmental activist movement. No, it was a global plot to enslave mankind. And we've seen now how that plot has basically been abandoned as they figured out a better way to enslave mankind. That's by building data centers, using AI to surveil you constantly, and using sort of private interventions through corporations to manipulate your behavior, as well as the chemical reaction that your brain has to stimulus. It's very sophisticated, but not that complicated. And we've been harping on about it for the last several decades. It's good to see people wake up to this. But it's frustrating seeing people wake up to the component parts, but not the major structure. It's like we're fighting Megatron, and half the people have woken up to the arms, half the people have woken up to the legs, and we're the only ones that are like, no, it's one gigantic robot. It's actually one gigantic robot. We have to defeat the robot itself. You can't just focus on one part or another. You especially can't be against this arm, be against the right arm, but in favor of the left arm. The whole thing has to be destroyed. And the whole thing is globalism. And it encompasses immigration, the shutdown, the lack of meat, the attack of the ticks. These are all part and parcel with globalist drive to eradicate the humanity they can't control. That's a good way of thinking about it. They want to control you. And if they can't, they'll just kill you. And that's just their worldview. And that's what they're going to do. And they are doing it right in front of everybody. They aren't asking for permission. They aren't giving you a chance to object and have your say. They're just doing it, and you just have to stop them. Again, that's the theme of absolutely everything I feel like Alex has talked about for the last 30 years and more. So we're going to continue that tradition today. But of course, we're going to talk about the major news of the day, big developments in Iran, big developments with Israel, and the continuing fallout of the abuse of the flotilla and the exposure. It's really all coming out, actually, now that I think about it. Say it in order. Today, we've got videos from the flotilla, from members, you know, European, you know, Japanese, New Zealanders, just basically non-Palestinians, non-Muslims, right? That's important to denote because a lot of people seem to think that Israel is at war with Islam, which is one of the main reasons that they support it, because they also think they're at war with Islam. Islam is a branch of Judaism, but we'll get into that later if we have time. We can get into that. But no, they're against everybody that's against them. These are Europeans. These are, you know, people like you and I, and they were subjected to abuse basically equivalent to the Palestinians. Now, when the Israelis do it to the Palestinians, they do it knowing that they can cover up the consequences. They can hide the, you know, exposure of this type of stuff, but they do it to Europeans who they know full well are going to be sent back to their country within days. They don't care that you know. They're kind of daring you to do something about it, and I think we should take them up on that dare. Frankly, personally, that's my position. But we've got that, and then we've got the story that we touched on a little bit yesterday, but we haven't really gotten into the details. But I think I'm seeing a pattern emerge. I think I'm identifying the constellation that all of these individual pinpoints are a part of. After tireless struggle by victims and finally a one-hour TV documentary this week, settlements south of Jerusalem admit their leaders have long created child pornography by filming when they gang rape kids in the community, no longer in denial. Gush Etzion admits to ritual abuse. And this is just the latest in a very, very long line of events, very, very similar to this in Israel and America and all over the world. It seems to be a bit of a pattern. I think I'm concerned. I'm very concerned about this. I think it needs to be recognized, talked about fearlessly. So that's what we'll do. And I had a bunch of videos that I was going to play yesterday. I never got around to them. And I hate to start the show off like this, like there's other stuff going on. But this is one of those things going on. This is one of those things that we have to contend with and we have to pay attention to and see if we can't dig a little deeper and identify what's really behind it. British surgeon who operated on Palestinians in Gaza tells Tucker Carlson how the Israelis would deliberately shoot starving male children in the testicles, shoot vulnerable pregnant women in their stomachs, and let newborn babies die in incubators, leaving their tiny bodies to rot for weeks on end. And this is, again, just the latest. Like, there are so many stories like this. We've seen videos like this. We've reported on it endlessly. You remember it was called the Flower Massacre? As in F-L-O-U-R massacre, because they literally set up food, you know, aid distribution points in Gaza, a population they were deliberately starving. And then when the Gazans rushed in excitement to get the food so they could survive farther, they shot them, you know, like a mousetrap, like they put a piece of food on a trap and then slammed it shut. And it's absolutely brutal and unconscionable, and yet it's being done with American weapons and American approval, and it's being covered up by the American media. It's very pathetic and sad that we've allowed this to happen to ourselves. Let's go to clip 36 here. British surgeon who operated on Palestinians in Gaza tells Tucker Carlson how Israelis would deliberately shoot starving male children. And again, you can call this guy Hamas, but he saw it with his own eyes, and that line is just not working anymore. You sort of spent all of that credit on all of the lies you keep telling, so now we're just going to acknowledge the truth and hopefully one day hold you people to account like you deserve, because you're worse than the Nazis. Let's watch.
I was called to the operating theatre by one of my Gazan surgical colleagues, who, he had a 12-year-old boy on the operating table, and he'd been shot. It had gone through his aorta. He was dying. He was bleeding. They couldn't stop the bleeding. So they asked for my help. I went in there. I couldn't stop it either. By which time his clotting had all gone wrong. This happens in severe injury. So he was bleeding out from there, and he died on the operating table under our hands. Awful.
I mean, 12 years old.
12-year-old. And his family told us, had come with him, that he had been sent by These were all starving. They're all very weak. So the young teenage boys are the ones who are sent out because they're the strongest to get the food. And he'd been shot by an Israeli soldier there.
Why?
And they'd witnessed this. Well, I can't speculate any better than anyone else as to why this is happening. What I can do is I can document what I saw, and I can document what I heard from, and it was a similar story from all the victims' families, from those that survived, from the victims themselves, from Gazan healthcare workers who went to these food sites in order to get food for their families. They all described the same things, how these young teenage boys were being shot by Israeli soldiers. They had noticed in the ER how there were different body parts being targeted on different days at the Gaza humanitarian foundation food distribution points, and other emergency room doctors and nurses I knew corroborated this, that 19 young teenage boys had all come in one day, all of whom had been shot in the head and neck. Nowhere else, just the head and neck. Another day, they came in predominantly with chest injuries. Another day, they came in predominantly with abdominal gunshot wounds. And we noticed this. I spoke, started speaking to my fellow surgeons in the operating theatres, and we all noticed this pattern as well. On one day, the Saturday before I left Nasser Hospital to come home to England, four young teenage boys were brought in, all of whom had been shot in the testicles.
Oh,
just
come
the
on
testicles.
Now.
Nowhere else. And the pattern of injuries that we all witnessed was so striking, that it was clearly beyond coincidental. And it seemed to us like there was a game of target practice.
And these were all children who'd been shot, Palestinians who'd been shot at Gaza Humanitarian Foundation food distribution sites.
Absolutely. And I operate on a lot of them. I also saw victims, young women who had been shot whilst in their tents in Al-Mawasi, quadcopters hovering over the tents, spraying bullets indiscriminately onto the tents. So I had one woman who was 3 months pregnant, who came in with a gunshot wound in her abdomen I operated on. We saved her life. The baby survived as well, but the bullet had missed her pregnant uterus by about 2 or 3 centimetres. We saw many examples of that. I saw them on my first trip in December 2023. We saw in Al-Aqsa, we had victims coming in from quadcopters.
What did you think of all of this?
I could not believe what I was hearing. I didn't believe a lot of it early on, to be honest with you, Tucker. I was naive, but I saw so much, on all these trips. I saw so much clear evidence of children and women being targeted that I believe all of it. There was an episode about 18 months ago, I think, in Al Nasser Pediatric Hospital in Gaza City. I think about 18 months ago, when the Israeli military invaded the hospital, kicked out all the local staff, and there were 6 neonates left in the incubators when they were kicked out. And they said, you know, there are 6 babies there, and they were assured they'd be fine. The Israeli military left after 2 or 3 weeks, and the doctors, you know, some of whom I knew, went back in there, and those 6 babies were there in the incubators, dead, their bodies rotting.
Oh, come on now.
And there are many other similar stories like that.
And it just goes on and on. And again, you know, this is the fantasy of evil that we were told to oppose for all of our lives. It's the scene out of Schindler's List, right? It's the Nazi commandant just shooting Jews for fun. Now, this didn't actually happen. Like, Schindler's List was, you know, not a true story. It was based on a fictional novel, and this character didn't actually do this. There's no actual, you know, legitimate reports of it. But it is happening on a regular basis with Israel. And it's not just the super evil, you know, commandant that everybody's scared to oppose. It's like the regular soldiers. They do it for fun. They have competitions doing it. It's pretty astonishing seeing, you know, these images that, again, have like traumatized people who've seen the movie. They come out of it like weeping and horrified and, you know, feeling this righteous indignation for the fact that the world allowed this type of evil to go on without seeing it. And then it happens in real life and nobody cares. See, it's crazy. It's truly crazy. They'll get more upset over the fantasy than the reality. They get more upset over the Hollywood fictionalized portrayal of something that didn't happen over the official confirmed reports of things that did. Okay? And it's worse. I think it's worse, right? That woman looked well-fed and an adult. No, he was shooting, I know the Israelis are shooting children who are, they've spent the last several years starving to the point of death. And we can continue with this because this surgeon was extremely informative in his conversation with Tucker Carlson from his firsthand point of view. We can go now to clip number 39. Dr. Nick Menard confirms Zionist military systematically executed over 300 civilians and medical staff at Shifa Hospital. Let's watch.
killed. Yeah, I mean, one young plastic surgeon who I knew, who I'd worked with in May 2023 when I was at Shifa Hospital, he was executed. And I think, and I use that word very carefully, he was discovered about a mile from Shifa Hospital with his mother. They were both, had their hands handcuffed behind their backs, and they both had bullet wounds in the brains. So I've had friends who've been bombed. I've had friends who've been shot.
And he was a plastic surgeon?
He was a plastic surgeon.
Why was he executed?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what goes on behind this. What I can tell you is that when Shifa Hospital's been destroyed effectively twice during this war, but when it was invaded initially, maybe 2 years ago, all the staff were displaced, including very, very close friends of mine. And when they were allowed back in, when the Israeli military left after a few weeks, they discovered the dead bodies of 300 civilians in the hospital. Some patients, some staff, many of them handcuffed with their hands behind their back, many of them with bullet wounds on the head, including this friend of mine.
And you can actually see they use the zip ties. And there's photos where they've, you know, uncovered the graves, and you can see the zip ties are different sizes, right? You've got zip ties that are about that big around for the adult men, and then they're a little smaller for the adult women. And they eventually get down to where they're zip ties about that big around, meaning they were handcuffing toddlers and babies' hands behind their back with zip ties and then shooting them in the head to execute them. Our greatest ally, folks, right? It's the right to do this that we're fighting for. That's the reason we're going to war with Iran. Israel was never under existential threat. This was never a matter of survival for them. They want to be able to do this stuff with impunity, and that's why they're fighting the war. That's why we're fighting their war. That's why we're losing the First Amendment in this country, because they want to be able to do this and silence you for talking about it. Okay? We can go to one more here. Prominent surgeon Dr. Nick Menard drops a massive bombshell confirming the Zionist regime systematically targets and murders healthcare workers in Gaza. And I bring this one up in particular because they have now exported this strategy, just like they're exporting all the strategies from Gaza, into Lebanon, where they are deliberately and systematically eliminating all of the first responders in Lebanon as quickly as they can as a method to stop people from helping one another, right? What they're trying to do is make people think, I'm not going to be a first responder. I'm not going to go help people. I'm going to get bombed if I do that. They're trying to shatter the Lebanese society this way. They already did it in Gaza. Let's go to clip number 40 here.
Every single hospital has been attacked. I mean, nearly 2,000 healthcare workers have been killed during this conflict, a far greater proportion than any other conflict in living memory. 75 Gazan healthcare workers have been killed per 100,000 capita of population. 75, the equivalent number in Ukraine, is 0.8. In all the other conflicts, it's single figures of healthcare workers per 100,000 population. In Gaza, it's 75. So there's been a grossly disproportionate killing of healthcare workers. All the hospitals have been attacked. And I think this is, I mean, I'm going to be talking to you about what I've seen with my own eyes. The disproportionate attack on the healthcare system, I think, has been a deliberate part of the Israeli policy to dismantle the whole infrastructure of living in Gaza.
And again, not just Gaza, they are now doing it in Lebanon, which I remind you was a Christian country majority until the 1980s when the Israeli attacks on Palestine spilled out into the Lebanese civil war, but still has a very sizable contingent of Christians. And I got lots of videos I could go to about what's going on in Lebanon before we do that. So they target healthcare workers, they target hospitals, they execute children. And if you think that this is just the action of like rogue extremists within the IDF and maybe the Israeli army, they don't approve of this stuff and they'll speak out about it, but they just don't have the ability to tamp down on the, you know, exuberance of some of their soldiers. That's not it at all. No, this is a top-down mindset that's inculcated into the troops for Israel. And these tactics are deployed not as a aberration, not as a, you know, something that the whole society comes together to condemn in the case of like the My Lai massacre here in America. That could actually be interesting, comparing the My Lai massacre and like what that was to like what they do in Gaza, and then the comparative response from America holding hearings and this big scandal, whereas in Israel, Like this is what they do. And again, I'm not just saying this. This is it. All right. Let's go to clip number 35 here. This is an Israeli member of the Knesset, I believe, talking to IDF troops ahead of their entry into Gaza. I believe this is the right video. I don't think it's, I think it's labeled wrong, but I think this is their entry into Lebanon. Let's go to clip number 35 here. He says, "Dear heroic warriors, not only do the eyes of the people of Israel look upon you, but also the eyes of generations upon generations who were beaten, humiliated, trampled, and killed without the ability to defend themselves. They dreamed of a day when a nation will arise from the ashes, capable of wielding its weapon and striking. Blessed be the ones who seize your children and smashes them against the rock." So said the Psalms poet, "And you're the fortunate ones, you're the blessed." Ah, yes. Blessed are the ones who seize their children and smash the infants against the rocks. Our greatest ally, folks. The upholders of Western civilization. Remember? Remember how they keep telling us that they're on the front lines of Western civilization against barbarism, and all they have to do is smash some babies' heads on the rocks, and then Western civilization will be saved. All they have to do is systematically murder an entire people group who did nothing wrong and has lived in abject poverty and de facto enslavement for the last 70 years. If we just smash their babies' heads until they're mush, then Western civilization will be saved. You guys, it's so simple. It's so simple. All we have to do in order to save Western civilization is fundamentally betray all of our most strongly held values. I can't believe we didn't think of this before. What defines the West? It's our openness. It's our tolerance. It's our understanding of human relations. It's the Christianity that undergirds the formation, the foundation of our various nations and in people groups. It's what separates us from everybody else. It's what makes the West different than any other group before or since the West rose to prominence. It's exactly these things that Israel is systematically destroying, not only in the world by doing this stuff and then, you know, not suffering any consequences, setting the precedent for this type of genocidal activity being justified and being cheered for. And of course, that's all part and parcel to the plan, because what they want is for people to see Israelis and Jews like smashing babies' heads against the rocks and doing target practice against children and pregnant women for fun, often using, you know, quadcopters to do so. You know, sometimes the quadcopters that they fly around with the machine guns, they play the sound of a crying baby to lure people out, and then they shoot them. And they want you to hear stuff like that and say, wow, these people are so despicable, we should smash their babies' heads against the rocks. We should crush them and humiliate and torture them because they absolutely deserve it. And I'm not saying they don't deserve it. They do. I get that. But you understand that doesn't help anybody. That justifies their actions. That makes retroactively what they did seem justified, because then they get to turn around and go, see, do you see what they do if they get in power? We have to kill their children or else they're going to do horrible things to us. The only way we get out of this cycle of insanity is through love and the selfless love of Jesus Christ in particular, which says that we're going to protect the world from you, and we're not going to do it with hatred. We're not going to do it with vengeance and malice, and we're not going to revel in the pain that we're causing you. But we do have to, for the sake of the innocent people out there, put you down like a rabid dog. And it can be done without hatred, and it can be done without fury and vengeance. It can be done in a very, you know, systematic and ruthless and merciful way. Merciful for the rest of us, merciful for the people that deserve it. But punishment is required here. And without that, this is going to continue forever. And they're putting they're setting their eyes on Turkey next. And who do you think comes after that? What do you think happens when Europe is fully conquered by the Muslims? Who do you think is next on the chopping block? It's not that complicated, folks. When Barack Obama's birth certificate came out, and I went to the government website, I downloaded the birth certificate, I put it into Adobe Photoshop, I separated the layers, and I thought, this is crazy. They released a fake birth certificate. I didn't need somebody to tell me that. I didn't read somebody say that and just believe it on trust of them. I did it myself. I saw it with my own eyes. I did it with my own hands. And then I tell my friend, he's like, you know, that's racist, right? I'm like, what? No, I just did it. And they're like, you know, it's like a racist conspiracy theory, right? And you're like, what? What is going on? So if you've experienced that, the reason is some people do not have the chemical balance to handle things like that. You need a lot of testosterone to handle things like that. You need to have your mind not warped and distorted by the dopamine feedback loop that social media is designed to create in your brain to enforce you into the pre-established, preordained, approved of mindset. So if you're here, you probably already are winning the chemical war over your own body, but that's why we sell the supplements that we do. Pretty much everybody takes up. Who doesn't take vitamins? Who doesn't supplement in some way or another? Who doesn't add a protein scoop when they get a smoothie at the store or take vitamin D or vitamin C or fish oil, you know, before bed or, you know, when you wake up? Isn't a crazy thing. This isn't an out there woo-woo type of thing. Everybody takes supplements. Everybody I know takes supplements. And if you're not, you should be. And so all we do is get the best supplements on the market, white label them. And so you get them from us, you're probably getting a better price than at the store. And you're absolutely getting the best possible quality of all of these products. If you're here for the first time and don't know why you would support us, because you get the information for free, because the streams are free, because there's no obligation for you to support us, that's all part of the strategy. The fact is, we're able to keep this free because you go to thealexjonesstore.com. Put this information into action. You have to understand the attack on humanity itself and then fight back against it in two different ways. One, by advocating and trying to seize power politically to change things from the top down. But while that's going on, you've got to be protecting yourself against this stuff. And we have a lot of supplements and vitamins and minerals and merchandise for you to do exactly that. Things like Atomic Defense, Methylene Blue, Methylene Red. These things are extremely powerful and combat exactly the type of poisons that we talk about on a continual basis. So I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not making claims here. I'm not saying it's going to, you know, cure any diseases or anything. But I'm saying that in the modern world, it's microplastics and, you know, atrazine and herbicides and growth hormones and fluoride that they put in the water on purpose because they want you dumb. You have to combat these things. You have to be protecting yourself and building up your internal shield so you can even handle the information that we're bringing to you. And that really is a thing. Testosterone, the higher your testosterone is, the more likely you are to go against the grain, to reject the herd mentality of the crowd and instead pursue justice or pursue the truth, regardless of who says anything about it. And there's a chemical balance that has to be achieved there. But that's why there's such an attempt to lower your IQ, lower your testosterone, lower your masculinity, lower your self-sufficiency, lower your self-confidence. Because they want you a tired, weak, overwhelmed, overworked slave. That's what the people in power have designed this world to do to you. And you don't have to take it. You can fight back. You can protect yourself. You can reverse the effects of the damage that's done to your body, as it is to all of our bodies, by going to the Alex Jones store and getting a product.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Answer to 1984 is 1776. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Go big or go home. That's my stat. That's my strategy. That's my statement. This is what I want my failures to look like. Folks, you don't want your failures to go down with a whimper. You want your failures to be felt 5 miles away. You want your failures to disrupt the dinner people are having in Boca Raton because they're wondering why their water glass is shaking all of a sudden. We want our failures to be commensurate with our victories, to be of the same size and scale of the victories that we win. It's the classic quote, the man in the arena quote. It's better to dare glorious triumphs and risk a devastating defeat than to live in that gray nothingness in the middle, achieving nothing. So I love Blue Origin. I love that they exploded. I think it's great. I think it's awesome. When are we going to get a explosion like this that isn't killing a bunch of people? Just a bunch of Jeff Bezos's toys. Jeff Bezos's toys blew up, and I'm here for it. That was the explosion of the Blue Origin New Glenn rocket exploding in Cape Canaveral during test. That's called job creation, folks. That's all going to have to be rebuilt now. That's called GDP. That's called money going up, folks. When we see that rocket explode, we see dollar signs. All right? This is about exploitation to the maximum degree. Several different camera angles of the new Glenn rocket explosion at Cape Canaveral's Launch Complex 36 are being shared on social media. The U.S. Space Force confirmed the rocket exploded at 9 p.m., and Blue Origin founder Jeff Bezos confirmed, saying all personnel are accounted for and safe. It's too early to know the root cause, but we're already working to find it. I think it was the fire in the explosion. I think that's what may have caused it. I'm glad everybody's okay. I don't know what Elon Musk does right, but boy, it goes wrong when other people try it. All I'm saying is it's a dream of mine. I'm very much looking forward to go watch some rocket launches, perhaps from the Starbase here in Texas. And if I went to a rocket launch and instead got to see a rocket explosion, I think I'd be happy. I think I would have liked it more. But that's just me. I feel like that's just my attitude now. I don't know. Anybody else? Anybody else feeling this way? It's like I'm just ready for it all to go down. I'm ready for it's just like everything sucks. Everything is retarded. Everything is stupid. I can't wait for it all to explode. I wish it would. We could restart then. I'm not an accelerationist because I've seen how that's gone in other places throughout history, like Rhodesia or South Africa or the UK for that matter, or downtown Austin, if you really want to get specific. So I don't think, you know, encouraging the collapse actually brings about a revolution. But if it could all go up in flames like a giant fireball, maybe it'll work. It's crazy enough, just my work, folks. Some people are preparing for it. Peter Thiel is apparently decamping to the end of the world. That's the story that's got a lot of people asking questions. Mr. Thiel, who according to one of the participants in a tournament, basically Peter Thiel moved his whole family to Argentina. Over the past 2 months, Mr. Thiel has met with the country's president, Javier Milei, and his ministers, purchased a mansion in one of Buenos Aires's most exclusive neighborhoods, and hosted a dinner with local economists where he discussed the Antichrist, one of his favorite conversation topics, according to Argentine officials and people familiar with Mr. Thiel's activities. I'm telling you, it is true. And like, I've explained this before, but, you know, there have been occasions in my life where I've gotten to, you know, hang out with billionaires. They talk about stuff like the Antichrist. They aren't up there, you know, talking about the latest political scandal. Billionaires get together and they go, so have you heard about, you know, that 25-year-old kid in California that's injecting himself with a serum that'll keep him 25 forever? This is a literal quote from a billionaire to another billionaire that I heard with my own ears. And they're talking about a 25-year-old who thinks he's going to be 25 forever. In fact, I think he's already been 25 for a couple years. Again, they age reversal, you know, parallel economies, parallel civilizations, the Antichrist. This is what billionaires actually talk about. It's why they don't like us, because we talk about this stuff. They want you focus on whatever the latest little scandal is, whatever the latest rumor mongering is, the latest resignation. That doesn't matter to the billionaires. They're above that. They're on a plane of, you know, interdimensionality and, you know, off-world entities and, you know, civilizational collapse. Like, that's what they talk about. That's what we talk about. That's why they don't like us. They want to be the ones talking about this stuff. They don't want the hoi polloi, the plebeians, talking about what they're doing. Oh, yeah, this story's from today. I didn't even grab it. Can y'all print this one out for me? Inside Putin's $26 billion quest for longevity, from mini pigs and organ printing to cryotherapy and genetics, Russia's president has turned anti-aging research into a Kremlin priority. Folks, just like AI, just like weapon systems, just like every form of technology, this is no different. What we have access to, what we have knowledge of, is probably 10 to 20 years behind what they actually have. If right now they're saying that they have successfully reversed aging on mice, what do you think they're doing in the secret human trials in places like Russia, in the wastes of Siberia? You don't think they're doing some experiments that the rest of the world doesn't know about? So, like, this is one of the things you have to understand. When they talk about scientific discovery, scientific revelations, understand that these revelations were made a long time ago. The revelation now is about selling it to you. It's about getting humanity up to speed with where they are already and bringing us along in a way that we confirm and affirm what they're already doing. So, just so you're aware. So, yeah, that's what they actually talk about. And this, the idea that Peter Thiel is moving to Argentina is not exactly surprising. As we know, Israel is setting up a mini state in Argentina, coincidentally right after gigantic forest fires burn the most sought after parts of that country, and Javier Milei signs a law to allow those lands to be purchased, and they're being purchased by Israelis at a rapid rate. They're setting up a little satellite Israel in Argentina. There's already one in Russia. There's a oblast that is independent and sort of a second Israel. They're doing the same thing with what they call quote-unquote heavenly Jerusalem in Ukraine. And they're also buying up lots of islands around Greece to serve as a, they're colonizing the world in a phrase. And Argentina seems to be, oh, this just broke. Trump lifts the U.S. naval blockade on the Strait of Hormuz, says Iran needs to open the strait to allow for Iran's stockpile of enriched uranium to be unearthed by the U.S., adding he's meeting in the Situation Room to make a final determination. All right. Is that true? I doubt it. But what can we glean from it? This is the way we approach this. Is what he said reflective of reality at all? Maybe. But what can we learn from it? For one thing, clearly Israel has Trump by the balls, and they're not letting him solve things with Iran. If that wasn't the case, then we would have basically been at peace now, because we had a peace agreement, we had basically signed on to it, Israel decided otherwise, and then we backed down. Okay, so that's one thing we know. So we know that Trump is probably pretty frustrated at this. Seems like he wants to end it, but doesn't want to lose face and isn't being allowed to end it by Israel. And it seems like, once again, he's changing the demands that he's making, and Iran is just ignoring him, more or less. Ships caught in the strait due to our amazing and unprecedented naval blockade, which will now be lifted, may start the process of heading home. Say hello to your wives, husbands, parents, and families from me, your favorite president. Okay. This is so dang. What? What are you talking about? That's crazy. So he's like, he's got a blockade that apparently is keeping people from their families. Apparently he's sort of holding them hostage. He's like, I'm releasing the hostages. Go tell your families hello for me. What? That's like a crazy Godfather move. That's wild. We're releasing you to go home. Have fun. Say hi to your wife for me. Okay. Thanks, kidnapper. Weird. Okay. So let's talk about the Iran war, shall we? Cause I don't believe it. I don't think that Trump just tweeted out has anything to do with what's actually happening. Let's go to clip number 5 here. This is Colonel McGregor confirming that Israel has total veto authority over everything Trump wants to do. And this is the case in just about every Western country where they've wormed their way into the highest halls of power. Let's go to Colonel McGregor now.
Number 1, Israel. Israel has veto authority over anything that President Trump decides to do. He is not in charge. He is responding to Netanyahu. The demands he sets forth in front of the Iranians and says, these are the things you must do, they're not our demands. Those are Israeli demands. So somehow or another, how do you break the hold that Netanyahu has on President Trump and the United States government? Nobody in Congress is going to stand up and jeopardize their income if they oppose the Israel lobby and effectively say no to Mr. Netanyahu. So that's problem number 1. Problem number 2 is President Trump and his personality and his fear of being castigated and humiliated for having done this stupid thing. And attacking Iran was a very dumb idea. Anybody with any sense knew that. And there's nothing that justifies the total mobilization for war that it would require for us to take control of Iran.
But that may be what we're doing. But here's another clip of Colonel McGregor. And again, we're going to tie all this together, but it's just obvious to anybody that's paying attention. It's just nice seeing people saying it. Let's go now to clip number 6. Colonel McGregor reveals that Trump secretly sold 18 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to Asian countries below market price. This relates to what he just said, in that Donald Trump is causing the economic crisis that's causing Americans pain. And in order to sort of not suffer the consequences of that, he's selling our strategic reserve to Asia. Let's go to clip number six.
The president has also dipped into the SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Remember when Biden did this, and this was during COVID, and Trump spoke out and raged against it, saying this was irresponsible and so forth? Well, I found out yesterday that he sold something in the neighborhood of 17.8 million barrels of oil just this within the last week, as an effort to suppress the prices of oil, to keep it below $110 per barrel. Well, the problem with this is, at this rate, our strategic petroleum reserve will probably be exhausted by the end of July, beginning of August, especially since he's also sold below market price unknown quantities of oil to some of our Asian friends. Now, doubtlessly, this was done because, after all, he never bothered to ask them what they thought about his dumb idea of attacking Iran. And this has tried to ease the damage. But this is not a long-term solution. This is all short-term thinking. What happens when...
All short-term thinking. I mean, it's not even short-term. I mean, you remember when they tried to push short-term pain for long-term gain? Remember when that was briefly invoked as a slogan for supporting the Iran war? There's no short-term gain. There's no long-term gain. It's all just loss. It's just loss upon loss. And it's unaffordable. Like, we can't sustain this. We really might not recover from what we've already done. Iran war drives multi-year missile defense gap. The war in Iran has exacerbated a shortage of missile defense weaponry that is likely to plague the U.S. and its partners from Ukraine to Taiwan for years to come. The conflict is draining weapons stockpiles far faster than American factories can replace them, leaving the Pentagon and allies scrambling to ramp up production and find cheaper alternatives. Zelensky wrote to Trump to urgently request interceptors to knock down expected Russian missile barrages, but Iran has taken top priority, and a new analysis suggests it will take years to replace the munitions expended in war. So they used so many interceptors in just the few weeks of the war so far in Iran that defense systems like the Patriot and THAAD in the Middle East stockpiles will not be replenished until 2029. That's assuming that the war does not resume, and even takes into consideration President Trump's massive $1.5 trillion defense budget proposal. So, again, just bankrupting us, making us less safe, and pushing us ever towards the specter of boots on the ground, which they apparently are ready to do and willing to commit to. We can go to clip number 20 here. This is Secretary of War Pete Hegseth saying that Iran, if Iran does not agree to take the $300 billion or whatever Trump is offering for a deal, then they're going to put boots on the ground. So here's him telling soldiers to get ready to go die for Israel. Let's watch.
And when you do your job, the adversaries know what's coming for them. And that's when they either step up and meet the fury of the American military or back down, and you create a whole bunch of options for America and the president with what he wants to execute on behalf of the American people. So right now, hey, Iran has a choice: meet at the table with the president and give up their nuclear program. And as the president said, I'm lost on time, 2 days ago now, in the cabinet meeting, I'm sitting right next to him. He looks in the camera and says, well, Iran can either do it the right way with a deal across the table, or they can deal with my guy on the left. That happened to be me. But it's not me. It's you guys. It's what you're ready to do. It's what the...
Yeah. Totally. Woo. Woo. Let's go die for Israel, so Israel can keep killing people with impunity. That's what this is all about. Let's not forget, Israel would not be destroyed if we didn't go to war with Iran. They would just have to stop killing Lebanese people for a little while. And they don't want to do that. They don't want to stop, though. So I guess we have to send boots on the ground and get into, you know, the quagmire this was always designed to be. It's great. It's great. It's great. So again, just acting like we have, and you know, the pathetic thing about all of it is Iran, every time we threaten something like boots on the ground, they're like, oh no, please don't. No, stop, don't. Boots on the ground here in Iran? Oh, whatever would we do? They're like so excited for the, they, so far it's been kind of hard for them to, you know, wages war. You know, there's too many things to blow up. They're like having to, you know, design their drones going out. What they want is just American boots on the ground so they can just slaughter them en masse, because that's exactly what would happen. So, yeah, I don't think they're that worried about all that. And why would they be when this is what our freaking defense department looks like? Let's go to clip number 25 here. As Donald Trump has just greenlit the largest military pay raise in modern history, backed by $1.5 trillion defense bill that overhauls barracks and military infrastructure and is totally unnecessary and could probably really be useful if we spend, I mean, can you imagine $1.5 trillion being spent on things like deportation or infrastructure here in America? Could you imagine the quality of life that we could have if we spent even a fraction of this money on ourselves instead of endlessly killing ourselves for Israel and being scammed out of existence by all various foreigners that are ripping us apart piecemeal? Wouldn't that be something? $1.5 trillion. Again, Donald Trump, the budget guy, the business guy, the deal-making guy, has basically resorted to, I need $1.5 trillion so I can send soldiers to be killed in Iran because they aren't capitulating to my demands. Okay, so you're not actually that good at making deals, not actually that good at wielding the military effectively, not actually budget conscious, not actually America first. So it was all a lie, I guess. I guess it's all been proven a lie. Let's go to clip number 25 here.
The United States has the greatest military the world has ever
known.
What
is this?
But not just because we have the best jets, the best ships, and the best weapon system, but because our greatest asset is the American warfighter. For too long, Washington has not done enough for the Americans who make our military the most lethal fighting force in history. Under President Trump, that changes right now. This budget is about our people. Because let's be honest about the reality on the ground. We ask our troops to leave their families, to deploy and train in the most complex threat environments since World War II. But when they return to duty, they're met with outdated facilities, substandard barracks, and too often, straight-up hazardous living conditions. On top of that, before this administration, we had young enlisted families relying on food pantries just to get by. This is, of course, completely unacceptable for the greatest fighting force in the world. Our troops should never be and will never be on food stamps. With this president in charge, no more. Things are changing fast. As part of our generational $1.5 trillion budget, we're making an aggressive, historic investment in military infrastructure by spending $90 billion on revitalized barracks and facilities. And that money will get rid of all substandard and failing barracks. But housing, it's only half the battle. This budget includes the largest pay raise for our troops in modern history, up to 7% for junior enlisted and pay raises for everyone in the force. We're also investing over $35 billion into the support systems that our military families rely on every single day. This budget fully funds military health care, finally making TRICARE more desirable than Medicare. We're investing in child care and youth programs, upgraded commissaries, and better military schools. And that's why this budget also provides record funding for the PCS task force and spousal employment programs to ensure a smoother moving process the way it should be. Taking care of our troops isn't about just doing the right thing. It's about military readiness. When our warfighters
know
that
we can take down the boomer slop. We can take down the AI-generated, poorly green-screened boomer slop now. Thank you. Here's the problem with, you know, the love and generosity that they're showing to the troops. You know, they're like, we are dedicating to, you know, $7 billion to actually giving them health care. Hey, what a novel concept. Of course, you know, the VAs are still going to die waiting in parking lots without receiving service. They're still going to be killing themselves at a rate of several a day for the foreseeable future. And all of that money that they're talking about to rebuild the barracks and whatever else would pay for about one day of the Iran war so far. So far, the Iran war has cost about $11.3 billion a day. So I think we could have spent that money a little bit better. I think we could have not raised the military budget to $1.5 trillion. Not gone to war with Iran, and not have to be struggling to do any of this if we've made better choices. So sorry if I'm not super excited at the green screen middle school level animation talking about how great our warfighters are when you are sending them to die for Israel. Yeah, $95 billion based on the Pentagon's briefing to Congress, $11.3 billion for the first 6 days, plus $1 billion a day ongoing, $95 billion so far for the 90 days. So I don't think we're spending our money very well. You know, it's like telling your kids, like, hey guys, I'm not going to make you eat rice and beans for every meal anymore. I'm going to get bacon. I'm going to get steak. And once a week, you guys are going to get protein. And guess what? I'm going to fix the hole in the roof over your bed so it won't rain on you at night. Anyway, I got to go. And then I hop in a $400,000 Lamborghini and drive away. That's basically what we're dealing with here. It's like, you know, this wouldn't be an issue if you didn't prioritize yourself first and foremost already. Like, this shouldn't even be an issue. We're not going to celebrate you fixing the problem that you people started and caused in the first place. And when we get back on the other side, I'm going to show you a couple videos from Candace Owens breaking some bombshell stories. Then I'll show you us breaking those same stories 8 months ago. Little We Told You show break. And then I'll be joined by Mary Tally Bowden. She, of course, is a doctor that pioneered effective treatments during COVID and got a profile for standing up against her hospital's attempts to use COVID to hurt people. And now she has a book that is banned by Barnes & Noble. Very excited to talk to her. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us. It is the final week for you to enter to win both the custom H1 Hummer and the 2026 Dodge Charger, plus $20,000 in cash. For every $1 you spend, you get 100 time entries to win both of these cars. There's always a car giveaway, but there's 1 week a month where you can enter to win both cars, so you're doubling your chances to win. Plus, you're getting free $10 on every order. Add that to the $10 you get as a VIP member. You're looking at practically free products at thealexjonesstore.com. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/VIP and sign up today.
Tonight at midnight, Alex Jones was thrown out and locked out of his InfoWars studio along with his crew after the 8-year-long legal battle trying to shut him down and censor him is coming to a close. And liberal media are celebrating with headlines like this. The lights go out at Alex Jones InfoWars, and InfoWars.com, the domain name, now has a message that just says off air. But these people don't know anything about Alex Jones, because if you just go to AlexJonesLive.com, the website looks very similar to the old InfoWars website. And look at there! There is a live feed of his show, the Alex Jones Show, now just not using the InfoWars name, where he is continuing, and hasn't missed a beat. If you go to the Apple App Store and the Android App Store and search for AJN Live, you can download the new Alex Jones Live app, where you can still listen to his show streamed live on your phone. Or you can just find and follow Alex Jones on Twitter, X, where he still has 4.5 million followers, because despite the lawyer's attempts to try to take his personal account, they failed. And you can see there the live icon around his profile photo shows that he is live streaming the show there on repeat 24/7.
There is a war raging for the future of humanity. We have opened a new front at AlexJonesLive.com. They thought they could silence us. They thought they could drive us off the air. They failed. We are back. Stronger, louder, unbroken. Find the fiends.
Hear the broadcast. Share the signal. AlexJonesLive.com. The coordinates of freedom.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I got my hours mixed up. I'm sorry. We'll be joined shortly by Tiffany Cianci, Mary Tyler Bowden in the 1 o'clock hour Central Time. But I want to spend this first 5 minutes of this hour talking about Candace Owens. This was posted yesterday with this headline. Candace Owens completely exposes FBI Director Kash Patel. She confirms he was deliberately installed to protect elite criminals and cover up massive Washington corruption. Let's watch.
I would push back on your point that Kash Patel isn't doing his job. I think he is.
Interesting.
I think that is his job. Mm-hmm. And that is why he is in there. They put him in there and they tell him what to do. And it is to look the other way and to come up with excuses. I think he is executing his job perfectly.
Well, he hasn't been fired yet.
Yeah.
So
his job is being executed perfectly. His job is to protect the elites. And shame on us for thinking that his job is to make sure justice is served. And he paid all that lip service. If I get in there day one, here's what's going to happen. None of that's happened because he went in there in the same way that Trump went in there. I don't know who their boss is. I actually think both of them have the same boss, if I'm being frank.
Yeah.
They both answer to Vegas and Tel Aviv, but it's clear to me that he is doing a great job for the people that he actually works for.
Yeah.
And again, you know, this is something that we talked about and really had confirmed all the way back in September of 2025. Here's Alex Jones in September, on September 22nd, 2025, talking about how inside sources expose that that's exactly what Kash Patel was doing, in this case with the Charlie Kirk assassination. But in every situation, Epstein files, Charlie Kirk assassination, it's been Kash Patel who's come in and shut the whole thing down. Here's Alex Jones.
And I got it from high-level White House sources, and I confirmed with others that were there, that they said, we don't want accomplices. This wasn't Trump. I mean, people at the White House heard this when they were having DOJ meetings. We're going with the lone gunman. We're not really going after the accomplices because Trump had said, I want the Trantifa. I want the six trannies that said Charlie be dead tomorrow. I want them SWAT teamed. I want them arrested. And the word went out, no, we're not doing what the big guy wants as usual. We're going with this story and that. And then 2 days after I came out with that, Kash Patel comes out and says, oh, no, we're looking at all the angles, and we're looking at multiple shooters. And Dan Bongino, I sent you guys a clip. I didn't see it on my list. It's like a 15-minute clip. Pull that up for me. I'll send it again if you don't have it. I shouldn't see it on my list. Or just go to X and type in, Bongino says they're looking at the crowd helping the shooter. Well, you say you want a conspiracy. Yeah. They're like, yay, yay, cheering. They're not scared when it happens. Two people say they killed him and said we did it as a diversion for the shooter. Yeah, there's your conspiracy right there. And it's crickets on that. Absolute, total, and complete crickets. So, yeah. It doesn't look like a cover-up. It is a cover-up. A cover-up of what? I'm not exactly sure. And maybe it was Netanyahu. If we find out, we'll report it.
I've got to get 10 different assumptions to make this gunshot work. And maybe, right, Alex? In the universe of worlds, maybe the jackpot Powerball got hit and all of those things happened. And that's what led to this 30-06 round nap passing through his neck. If you want to believe that, and I know some people do, that's fine. But I'm sorry, it's not.
I don't know anybody wants to believe this now, but the FBI. But I was told 2 days before Patel came out, said we're looking at everything, all the angles, helpers, hand signs. I was told from inside the White House, no, they're going with lone gunmen. They're not even looking at the Trantifa saying he'll be dead tomorrow. So I was told by very credible people there's a cover-up, and I don't say that with pleasure. Let me tell you this one piece of intel.
All right, so that is from, again, September 22nd, 2025. And I want to go quickly, if we can, because, you know, we exposed the Charlie Kirk thing before literally anybody else. I want to go to clip 22 here. We just have time. Let's watch.
обсуждать, потому что
he said, I don't even want to discuss this because this topic has nothing to do with our diplomatic work. He was asked about Epstein. This topic has to do with exposing the face of what is called the collective West, that is called the deep state, even now no longer a state, but a deep alliance that rules the entire West and is trying to rule the world. He's talking about the Epstein class, which is exactly the people pulling Cash Patel's strings, and we've been telling you about it for years at this point. Stay.
The most banned man in America, Alex Jones.
I want you all to know something. Alex Jones was right.
Alex is right about far more than he's wrong.
Alex has been right on for over a decade.
I don't care how you slice it, dice it, flip it up, or rub it down. Alex Jones was right.
Think about how frustrated we are if you've been awake for a year or two. Imagine being like an Alex Jones or those guys who've been awake for like decades.
Alex Jones called this years ago. Years ago.
Alex Jones never bought the Russia hoax. Not for a second.
You are one of the great thinkers of this.
You are a martyr to the First Amendment.
The government fears Alex Jones.
That's why the globalists hate me, is because I'm exposing their corporate worldwide tyranny.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, folks. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. I'm joined by Tiffany Cianci. You can follow her on X at The Vino Mom. The Vino Mom on X. She, of course, is a regular guest here. We're in contact because you're there in Kentucky trying valiantly to get Thomas Massie over the finish line. And, we of course all did everything we could, but you know, sometimes a couple tens of millions of dollars really, really does the trick there, doesn't it, Tiffany? We need your audio up.
Oh, so sorry. I honestly, if I had known how difficult the state laws in Kentucky are the second hardest state laws for primarying in the United States, right? And so the way that Kentucky's laws are written, you have to be registered to vote for that person 6 months before the election. And that's why AIPAC didn't start spending any money until February, because you had to be registered in December. And so none of the young people that wanted to support Thomas Massie could go register to vote at any point after AIPAC started spending money. But I think he came up a lot better than he otherwise would have. And I think he's got huge prospects now as a result of the work we did. And we had 3 billion impressions in 6 days.
Yeah.
And it was a very successful outing for us.
I think so too. And, you know, it showed that people aren't just willing to roll over and surrender to these people. And it really is all about the fight. And I look forward to seeing what Thomas Massie does in the future. Of course, he was on a boat in Costa Rica recently, and I think he deserves a good vacation. But actually, you're here to talk about another topic that you've been coming on the Alex Jones Network, previously InfoWars, for years talking about and warning about and trying to sound the alarm about: private equity. And of course, Larry Fink, BlackRock, the World Economic Forum, the way private equity is being used to dismantle the United States should be the top story every single day until we solve this problem. But I understand there's another attack, yet another chance for us to stand up and fight against these people.
Yeah.
What do you got for us today, Tiffany?
Well, so this week, Larry Fink was on a stage and he said kind of the quiet part out loud, which is that these data centers aren't going to be paid for by the tech companies. They're going to be paid for by people's retirement accounts, which is sort of what I've been saying. It ties right into what I've been saying. And I don't know. I sent you the clip. I don't know if you guys have the clip, but he sat on stage and said, we're not paying for this. The retirement accounts are going to pay for this because we're going to pay for the bubble that's being created that is absolutely unnecessary. And when you look at the heart of the issue of what we're facing right now, we see private credit markets, private equity markets, and the steal of our 401ks happening now on a multifaceted front. And there's two attacks on our 401ks this week. And one, we have something we can do about, but I think all of them are really important because people can act on all of them. And if we don't have that clip.
Yeah, no, let's start with that clip because we do have that clip. And I think I want you to kind of break it down for us, translate it for us, because obviously when these people discuss these things, like Larry Fink, I mean, they're very, very good at discussing it in a way that seems benign, that seems like, well, it's either, you know, just going to happen, it's just inevitable, so we just have to deal with it, or that it's actually a good thing, and we're actually giving you a chance here to, you know, get in on the ground floor. I mean, they have a way of selling this that it sounds at the worst benign, but really maybe a positive. So I'd like you to sort of deconstruct what he's saying and explain, you know, what it actually means, because clearly it ain't good, and he's not speaking in a forthright fashion. So this is from Shadow of Ezra. The CEO of BlackRock, Larry Fink, admits the trillions of dollars being used to build data centers and power grids will come from ordinary people's saving accounts and pension funds, saying it's going to be mandatory. Let's watch.
If we could get more and more Americans to think about growing with the United States, we will have far than enough money to invest in this infrastructure. But as the governor was talking about, the need for electrons is growing every day. Some of these, you know, if we're going to be the leader in technology, which we are, if we are going to be the leader in AI, which we presently are, it's just going to require trillions of dollars of investments. And if we don't invest in it, China will be the global leader in this. And so to me, it's not whether. This is a must. And if you think about how that translates, it translates into a more dynamic economy. We need the United States economy to grow at over 2%. We need the U.S. economy to grow at 3%, especially with the growing deficits the federal government has. And so much of this money, not just the projects, is going to be coming from the private sector, from savings accounts, from pension accounts, from insurance companies, and on and on and on. The whole world is in need of improving the infrastructure.
So there you go. We have to. It's mandatory. They're basically not asking questions. Break down for us what he just said there. Translate that into human.
So what he said was very, very much the quiet part out loud, which is it's mandatory. We have to make the most data centers. We have to grow the most infrastructure. To be frank, China only has 10% of the data center infrastructure that we do because they recognize that the future of compute is not going to be in data centers. Right now, these data centers are being built across an electrical grid that we've allowed to crumble over the last 30 years while China's built the like most robust infrastructure improvements in the world. But they also recognize that these data centers are outdated within 3 years. By the time the walls are up, the chips that they ordered when it started are no longer relevant.
That's something I think people don't understand. These data centers run so hard all the time that they burn out graphics cards in 1 to 3 years, depending on their usage.
Correct.
So if you're talking about a 60,000 acre, whatever, you know, server farm, imagine that entire landscape having to be replaced a year later or at the most 3 years later. I don't even understand how that could even be feasible or possible with the size of data centers we're talking about. You're supposed to replace those every 3 years. Where is the material even going to come from? It's insane. People don't know that. They don't understand how all of this stuff has to be replaced constantly for data centers. The servers they operate on only last a year to 3 years.
Correct. And as you look at the fact that we're building, we're expected to have 5,581 data centers in production by the end of the year. China's the next closest with like 550. But China's also open sourcing all of their development and they're decentralizing all of their compute, which means that it's going to be in computers. It's going to be on people's homes. It's going to be in small decentralized compute generators. And as the models get better and better, the compute mandatory is going to be less and less, which we're already seeing coming out of China in real time. But what we're seeing here in the United States are a bunch of real estate developers that scrambled to jump on this bandwagon and now are stuck in a bubble where they need to keep us believing we need this many data centers. We do not. We do not require this many data centers. And they have now invested and promised trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars through companies like Anthropic, through companies like OpenAI, through companies like Google, through companies like Grok, that is now acquired by SpaceX. And that is why I sent you over the clips today about the fears related to the IPOs that are coming for Anthropic, OpenAI, and Grok, because that ties directly into this. They're now stuck in this bubble where all of these data center buildouts are being funded by private credit, and those deals are falling apart. And that's why private credit markets are starting to be halted. That's why they can't have withdrawals. That's because you're not seeing returns. It's because we have a bunch of money that's promised to all of this compute through companies that have no profit model that is viable whatsoever, that are committed to trillions and trillions of dollars. Sorry. And as they're doing it, I apologize. As they're doing it, we're seeing in real time that they don't have a way to pay it back. And they're moving it off books. Meta is a really good example right now. Meta has the third or fourth largest data center in the world being built in Louisiana. And Meta has, they moved it to a shell company. And it's hundreds of billions of dollars. And they moved it off their books, so it's no longer in their quarterly reportings to Wall Street. So it looks like they don't owe anything. But they are due to pay it back over 30 years when that data center will be obsolete within three.
Right.
There is no viable model, and it's being funded from pensions. And the reason that this is important is because we've been talking a lot about rating of pensions, and all of this is about to wrap up in a bow to what we started talking about a year ago. So if you pull up one of the articles I sent you on the IPOs of Anthropic, OpenAI, and SpaceX.
Yep.
Right now, all three of those companies are seeking trillion-dollar plus valuations with no profitability. That has never happened before, ever, in the history of the stock market. Now, what no one's talking about is the SEC quietly approved a rule that the Trump administration pushed through just a couple months ago that said if a company came in with a valuation that high, they were guaranteed immediate access first to the Magnificent Seven, so it'll become the Magnificent Ten, which are the only companies propping up our entire economy right now artificially through cyclical investment with one another, the same $100 billion passing around one after another in a circle, right? But simultaneously, there's a new rule that allows them immediate access to index funds. Now, normally there was a 12 to 18 month waiting period after a company went public. That's going to IPO. Okay. To prove that those big high valuations when they came in the door would have legs, that they would have profits, that those profits would pour in and that there would be returns. And after that, you got to be included in index funds. Index funds are considered a safety valve, a mechanism for investing in the stock market through your pension and your 401k that allows you to diversify your risk so that you don't, if one company falls out, your portfolio doesn't fall out. The problem is that the tech ETF or ETFs index, the utility indexes, the commodities indexes are all now tied in to AI exclusively almost. Right. All of the things we're buying, all of the heavy minerals, all of the water usage, all the utilities that's going there, all of the build outs of infrastructure going there. Right. All of the commodities that we're buying to build out all those chips and to build out all of that infrastructure going there. And all of the tech companies are intrinsically tied there. Well, if these three companies, like let's look at SpaceX, $18 billion in revenue, they're seeking $1 trillion valuation, $18 billion, no profit model. They're losing $5 billion a year right now and they're seeking $1 trillion valuation. OpenAI. Their first two forays into trying to demonstrate profitability failed. They created Sora. It flopped in under 3 months. But they say they're going to be worth $1.6 trillion, right? And so if they get these valuations, immediately all of our retirement accounts will have to buy into them at the top of the market. The moment they hit the market, they'll be automatically added to the index funds. And that has never happened before. That's a brand new rule.
No,
and that is why we're going to be forced to buy them and pay for this.
It's completely insane. And it's like, what even is the promise of potential profitability? Because at least with big tech and, you know, it was always, you know, Amazon, for example, would take a loss year over year. But they had a strategy where, well, as long as we get the customers and as long as they become loyal, then it will pay off down the road. Sure, we'll, you know, give returns even though we shouldn't and we'll lose money. But we're capturing segments of the market, consumer goods. So like there's money in the future to be had. You know, big tech. Sure, they might, you know, it might be expensive to run server farms, but you get people on the platforms. Now you can start advertising to them. There was a potential for profitability there. They're not going to be bringing in trillions of dollars worth of token buys, right? Like there's absolutely no way that this becomes profitable in a traditional market system. So either it's going to be government contracts. So it's like they're taking money from the pensions to build these in the first place, and then they'll be paid back for that by the government contracts that are already guaranteed, or else they wouldn't take the risk of putting the trillions of dollars into building these in the first place if they didn't know there was going to be a return on investment out of your tax dollars. Do I have that right, at least in part?
You do, and you absolutely have that. And what people really aren't realizing is how much AI is being subsidized right now. Okay. They need to get us addicted to it. There is a reason that Sam Altman came out and said that he sees intelligence in the future as children and people not having it and us renting it back from him as if a meter on a utility. They need us addicted to AI because they've already gone all in on this and the bottom is going to fall out. It's not replacing real people. It's not doing the things they said it could do. The young people are absolutely anarchy, like mutinying against it. We've seen 5 consecutive commencement speeches where AI was mentioned and the speakers were booed off the stage this last 2 weeks. Right. And we see this, but we also don't recognize that to get us addicted, they're subsidizing all this compute with just blatant spend and no profitability. Right now, if I spend $100 a month with Anthropic, I get $16,000 worth of compute. That is not a sustainable business model. And all of these companies that are eliminating coders and saying we're going to go to using AI to do our web development or AI to do our security protocols are realizing very quickly that when that subsidy ends, this is going to cost 5 times what an employee would have.
Yeah.
People are more effective and they're cheaper.
That's the irony is that people are going to, you know, basically turn their entire businesses over to these AI companies that are going to be able to jack up the prices. And what are you going to, you know, do? You're stuck with them from then on. It's just such an obvious, scam. All of it is just a giant scam. And so there's no way they're going to be making the money back with, you know, tokens, especially not when you've got Chinese models that run for like 1 cent versus $10 for one of the American models. So they're going to get outcompeted by, the Chinese models anyway. So the only way that this becomes profitable is, well, it'll really never become profitable.
War.
It'll be useful. It'll be worth it if they use it to create the basically digital panopticon and they can, you know, structure the activities of humankind as a whole. And yeah, I guess you can turn that profitable eventually, but no, it's about control and has nothing to do with the market whatsoever, does it?
Yeah, absolutely. And like the article is showing right now, the newest AI boom will be mini home data centers at your home. That's a viable model of decentralized compute. We don't need these giant data centers. And I always love to point out, where are these tech bros that were screaming about global warming 3 years ago? The data center around the corner from my house, it's 70 degrees hotter a mile up in the air. 70 degrees. They told me it may never snow at my house again at our last county council meeting. Where are the global warming guys? Where are these tech guys that were screaming about global warming when we're building entire microclimates for these data centers because they have to keep the bubble growing, right? We need to keep this bubble churning because once the bottom falls out, so does the entire economy because our entire economy is being floated by it. And so now they're going to get our retirement accounts through these index funds. And they're going to get it to bail out the private credit markets when the bubble happens over on the Department of Labor side. So we have 2 separate problems that we need to do a lot about.
Yeah, well, and they're deeply intertwined. I mean, the data centers and the private equity are 2, you know, tentacles of the same beast. And, you know, you point out it's one of the most like egregious in your face. I can't understand why it's not having more of an impact, the way in which they abandoned climate change in favor of data center. I mean, it's just it wasn't subtle. It wasn't like, you know, they had it happen over time to get people used to it. Like New York Times had the article yesterday. Why scientists retired the dire climate scenario that's been used for over a decade. While global warming is still a threat, the decision to back away from worst case outlook raises questions about whether some risks have been overstated. It's not that complicated. They found out a better way to control and enslave you. Like, that's it. That's what the purpose of climate change was. Now they found a better way that actually requires a ton of energy. So climate change doesn't matter anymore. I mean, they just did it. Yeah. And like, people don't even notice how obvious all of this is.
I mean, I don't know how anyone could not see that when it was literally these tech billionaires that were screaming the loudest about it. They were doing carbon exchanges and they were telling us we needed to all move to electric vehicles. And those same companies, right, SpaceX and Tesla, that were screaming everybody needs an electric vehicle, are now saying, and we can have plants that output the energy of 70 atomic bombs per week.
Yep.
Into the skies. You can't have it both ways.
No.
You really can't, but they really want us to have it. You know, they want us to just swallow that pill. And China's recognized a better way to do it. They're open sourcing all of their development, which means that they're going to 200,000 people and saying, give us the best idea. What's the best way to reduce compute? What's the best way to get the most efficient models? And in doing that, they're letting the genius of their population, the cream, rise to the top. And they're going to come out ahead because we have put all of our faith in 4 billionaires that, frankly, a lot of them say the most sociopathic things imaginable, right? And they're all telling us, give us all of your data, which is the most valuable resource on earth, by the way. And we promise at some point, trust me, bro, we'll come up with the best idea. One of the three of us is definitely going to have it. You know, and that's why we're losing. We're allowing monopolists to control the narrative. We're allowing monopolists to control our market. We're allowing monopolists to control our administration. We're allowing monopolists to control all investment. We're allowing monopolists to control our regulatory agencies. And as a result, we're going to be the socialized risk that bails out the bubble that's going to pop and destroy this economy.
And it's all, you know, coming from the same sources. It's all coming from the intelligence agencies. I'm going to show a clip, you know, when we get back after commercial break from John Kiriakou, where he's, you know, laying out the history of InQtel and the fact that the CIA decided it was shortly after September 11th. They were, you know, given a pass to invest for profit in tech companies in order to get access to emergent technology. And the first company that they contracted with was Palantir, of course, and Palantir has now become the basically operating system of the New World Order. And it's not a coincidence that the people building the data centers are now saying, well, these people protesting data centers, they're being funded by China, and this is domestic terror. And in fact, this video just broke like 1 minute before you came on air, and it is a it's from M. Red Pill's Joke Army. Police running down and harassing a guy over a post on Facebook about protesting data centers. So I think we have that video. Let's go to this. I want to get your comment on the other side. But it's not a coincidence that these data centers are being built in such a way that's destroying the lives of the communities with this and the aggressiveness with which they're pursuing this goal and then criminalizing opposition to it. This is, I mean, we've never seen anything like this in America before. But this is what it looks like. Let's watch.
Punks right here came by because I'm trying to organize a community protest against a representative who's trying to push in a data center owned by a out-of-state company, trying to suck up all our energy. I made an event on Facebook trying to organize the community to get together. And what's your badge number? And badge number?
I detected that.
And name and badge number?
Sure. SHRP and it's
160. Okay. Yeah. I have a First Amendment right to protest. And if I organize a protest on a public road, there's nothing wrong with that. I sent an email to that representative and I can show you the email. I never made a threat. I told, no, this is my house and I'm going to talk. You guys are on my property trying to intimidate me because I'm organizing a protest against a data center. Then why are you here?
Well, that's if you let me. Okay, so first off, do you want to talk about this?
Talk about what? There's nothing to talk about. I'm organizing a protest, and I'm allowed to do that. It's a First Amendment protected activity.
110%.
Yeah.
The issue is some of the communication, the Facebook posts. I would disagree that there's.
I haven't made a single threat. Tell me what threat I made.
Okay. Well, you know what you posted.
No, give me a quote. Quote a threat, because I didn't make one. I'm organizing a protest on a public street, demanding a representative.
The safety of his children.
Huh?
What about the safety of his children?
Someone else made a comment about the safety of his children.
Did you?
No.
You didn't?
No. What I said if he valued his children's safety, he probably wouldn't be trying to ruin the world that they're being brought up on. And that isn't a threat. That's the fact that I'm watching this man ruin the world around here. And yes, I'm allowed to say that if someone cares about their kids, they shouldn't destroy the community that their kids are being raised in. That's not a threat.
The problem is you didn't say that in the post.
Yes, I did.
You did not.
Pull it up. Pull it up and read it. Pull it up and read it.
I've been dealing with this all afternoon.
Cool. Pull it up and read it.
Okay. So that's the concerning part is obviously, yes, you have the right to make an event, you have the right to public protest, everything else, right?
Listen. I never made a threat.
Okay. Well, we disagree, and our state's attorney disagrees. Okay, so you're going to be charged today for a couple of offenses.
Seriously? I'm going to get charged. For what?
For stalking and intimidation.
For stalking? When did I ever go to his house?
So we'll explain that to you more. Okay, so you are going to be placed under arrest right now, okay?
Okay, so let me
conclude your live stream.
Wow.
We need you to stay here with you.
I didn't even realize they actually put him under arrest. I thought this was just another case of intimidation. They actually arrested a guy for planning a protest against data centers because he says this person has kids, and if he cares about his kids, he should care about the community they grow up in, and they're interpreting that as a threat. That is a terrifying precedent to be set.
You know, they're trying to say that these are funded protests. I've got to tell you, I've never seen a more unifying movement in my adult life. In the United States, we are in Maryland. I'm based in Maryland, right? I'm outside DC. Obviously, I'm in DC a lot. But I live out in very rural agricultural land, Maryland, where we are on Data Center Row. And we had thousands of farmers turn up to protest our data centers, and they rubber stamped the last two. And in our state, we have referendum laws, and so do 26 other states in the United States. And our state is doing a referendum to stop all data centers. And our captain is three doors down from me, and she's a retiree with a kid in college. So I'd love to see them say where the funding is coming from, because we're watching it in real time here.
Absolutely. And we need communities to stand up and pass laws like that. You can do it. They've done it in Texas. We'll be right back.
We have to get more people hired. We have to finish the new big studios. We have to have our legal defense and offense, and we have to move forward. So now is the time. Have we not delivered to you in the fight against tyranny? Have you not delivered supporting us at Symbiotic? A win-win situation. Like he says in Gladiator after he chops up, you know, the four guys just a few seconds. He says, are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? And I say, are you not empowered? Are the tyrants not scared? Are they not coming after me and my crew? You want somebody to fight? You want somebody to stand up for you? Well, then you got to back them. And those that have backed us, I salute you from the bottom of my heart. And those that have shared the articles and videos, that's great. But it's different classes of people. The people that tune in and get the knowledge, but are scared or lazy or whatever. Then there's people that at least share the articles and videos. And Paul Revere it. We appreciate you. Okay? So you got like copper, you know, on the bottom. At least you listen. But I hope people learn from this through osmosis or something. Then you got the silver folks that at least share the articles and videos to wake up other people. And then you got the gold standard, the people that do it all, and the people that get great products that are smart enough to say, wow, this guy really knows what he's talking about. I believe him. He'd only sell me something that works. And then they try it. We have a 90%+ reorder rate with supplements, because I wouldn't sell you something that doesn't work. I'm not stupid. That's why I don't serve evil. I know the second, third, fourth order events of it will destroy me. Plus, I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. I feel good being truthful. I feel good being honest. I feel good stomping tyrants politically into the ground nonviolently. Slashing their throats nonviolently. Stabbing ice picks in their heads nonviolently. Cutting their heads off nonviolently. Ripping their entrails out politically nonviolently. I like just breaking their bones and grinding them down to make my bread. Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell the blood of satanic globalist scum. Be they alive or be they dead, I'll grind their bones to make my bread. You want somebody to fight for you? Well, you better believe you got it. The real McCoy. The spirit of resistance and victory. And they know it, and it's why they fear it. And if you will simply join me and ask God for this spirit to lead, guide, and direct us, the spirit that overcomes, God doesn't give us over to a spirit of weakness and fear, but one is a roaring lion that conquers, that destroys tyrants, that overcometh. And when the enemy comes in like a flood, the spirit of the Lord lifts up a standard against it. And we are the crucible. We are the shield of the people. We are the standard. We have the spirit. We have the will. But we have to have no fear and commit to this fight. Give me your word of mouth. Give me your prayers to God for our providence and support, because if God be with us, who can stand against us? And financially support us now at thealexjonesstore.com. Become a VIP. Cancel any time. It's no commitment. You just get all the best deals. $30 a month spend, instantly $40 to buy whatever you want. You make 10 bucks right there. Special deals, special offers, sales on top of sales for everybody, and special offers at thealexjonesstore.com. Commit. Be a VIP. You can also donate on the site at the donate button. Just take action now. But those of you that have supported us, you know who you are, and I thank you from the bottom of my soul.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Listening to an AJN Live Frontline report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the show. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. Support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. We actually have some pretty great offers for you there today. This week is the final week to be entered to win both the Hummer, custom H1 Hummer and the 2026 Dodge Charger. You're always entered to win a car if you shop at the alexjonesstore.com, but once a month, there's a week where you can be entered to win both the cars. So you're doubling up your chances to win both, either or both of the cars, plus $20,000 in cash. For every dollar you spend, you get 100 times entries this week only at the alexjonesstore.com. We're also giving you a free $10 on the alexjonesstore.com. Anything you purchase will be $10 off. That offer ends Monday, June 1st at midnight. There's also different tiers of benefits. So if you spend $99, you're going to get free shipping. Spend $125 at thealexjonesstore.com, you get free CMOS capsules and the free shipping. Spend $175, you get free Shilajit capsules, free CMOS capsules, and free shipping. That's the offer right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. And with that, we return to our guest, Tiffany Cianci. Follow her on X at TheVinoMom. How else can people follow and share your content, Tiffany?
You can visit TiffanyCianci.com. You can come visit me over at Tiffany Cianci on TikTok and on YouTube. And I'm the Vino Mom on Instagram.
There you go. And we're talking about what's happening with data centers and private equity and the hellish marriage of both of these things. What is the Save Our Bacon Act? And why should people be concerned about this?
So the Save Our Bacon Act is sort of related to what we've been doing on pesticide immunity, right? Like, I've been on your show talking about pesticide immunity in the war room a lot. And Alex has been talking about pesticide immunity a lot. Pesticide immunity was one to grant pesticide immunity to, and is still the effort to give pesticide immunity to foreign chemical companies like Syngenta from China and more prevalently, Bayer Monsanto, the German company. And they've been infiltrating our government with money. Well, they're not the only agricultural monopolies that are doing that. And we're seeing, like, most of our meat packing industry is entirely owned by Brazilian and Chinese companies. Smithfield is owned by China. Brazilian companies own like 80% of the meat packing in the United States, something that Thomas Massey's been working hard to fight. And so when you look right now at what just went into the House, the farm bill that's crossing over to the Senate right now for a new markup, we were able to strip pesticide immunity out. On the fourth attempt, they've pushed this legislative session to secure it for these billionaires that are spending big money to get it. But the Save Our Bacon Act did not get stripped out. And the Save Our Bacon Act is an act that is framed to say that we need it to save the pork industry, that the pork industry is in dire need of an overhaul because states, and they frame it as woke states and liberal states, are making it impossible for farmers to make money. No, monopolies that are owned by foreign governments and foreign investors are making it impossible for farmers to make money. What this bill is designed to do is to make it so when states like Tennessee pass laws that say you can't hold a pig in a crate where they can't sit up, stand up, or move its entire life, which creates a lot of like lesions, illnesses, forces a lot of chemicals into the pig. When a state like Tennessee passes that law, this law supersedes states' rights and says states no longer have a right to regulate the meat their citizens eat. And so this is undoing, if this passes, this will undo states' rights all across America, force a bunch of cruelty back into our food supply that has been like drifting towards humanity at the behest of farmers that want that for a long time. But at the heart of all of it is the erosion of states' rights, which is an ideal that this show stands firmly with. And so the Save Our Bacon Act did cross to the Senate, and now we have a very short window to try to stop it. Because you have several states, mostly agricultural farm states, that have passed laws saying we don't want a bunch of poisons in our meat. And most people don't realize that this is sort of tied to what Thomas Massey has been working on, right? He just got the Prime Act included in the Farm Bill. And the Prime Act, that's designed to make it so that a local farmer here in rural Maryland, where I live, can go to a local meat processor, have that meat broken down, and they can have it packaged, and we can eat it fresh, close to the source. No chemicals, no methane added in, nothing to make the skin pink again, nothing to pump in chemicals in the packaging. What's happening with about 80% of the pork and the beef in the United States right now is they will say that it is raised and packaged in America. It doesn't say made in the USA. It says raised and packaged in America. And that's because they put them in these industrial farms and a pig is then put to slaughter and then it's packed in ice and it's shipped like 2 months across the ocean to China, where it is then processed in China, filled with a bunch of chemicals, a bunch of treatments, bleach baths, And then they put it in packaging and they pump a bunch of chemicals into the holding containers to keep it looking pink. And it comes 2 more months back across the ocean. Right. And then we plastic wrap it here and it looks like it's raised and packaged in America. But it's had 4 months of chemical interventions on the way back and forth across the ocean. We have no idea what happened to it when it got there and how many chemicals were used, how many antibiotics, how many bleach baths it went through. So when you see that these monopolies have fundamentally forced farmers to make less money and forced them to use practices they don't want to, and then you have states that step in and go, we want to protect our farms. We want to protect our meatpacking. And now we have a new effort to undermine the state's right to do that for their own citizens, for their citizens to vote for what they want and what they want their children to eat in their food, right? And so when you see this, you see these consummate efforts by monopolists that are not American companies, by the way. These bills are being written at the behest of foreign interests that control our food supply. That is something that we need to take an active role in and we need to stop. And that's something. And so the Safer Bacon Act is just as important as removing pesticide immunity because we have foreign interests that have taken control of our food supply and we need to stop it. The Prime Act that Massey has been working so hard for the last 5 years, that makes it so we can get back to packaging local food. We used to have 200,000 meat processors and packers that were all small businesses in America. Now we have less than 1,500.
Wow.
Less than 1,500 left.
And that story about shipping things to China, I mean, I know that's true. And I used to always point it out as showing the hypocrisy of the climate change agenda, you know, being pushed by globalists, where it's like, hey, look, if you really are concerned about, you know, pollution, how about not sending a giant container ship across the Pacific Ocean twice to process animals? I assume they do it with pigs, but I know they used to do it with chickens, where they would raise chickens here, ship them across the Pacific Ocean, process them, and ship them back. And they act like that's, a positive. I don't know how much they're saving by doing that, but I can't imagine I can't imagine how much they're saving that it's worth it to ship something twice across the Pacific, but apparently it is. It shows you, you know, what corners they're cutting, I guess.
But this is also one more example of how we are subsidizing entire other nations' economies. They've got entire divisions of Chinese provinces that are dedicated to processing our meat by taking the jobs that we could have here processing locally. Think about how much money could be saved and a local farmer could just sell to us fresh, right?
Yep.
They don't have to sell their pigs to these meat packages. The problem is that we've allowed so much regulatory infiltration by these mega corporations and monopolies that they have forced so much regulation onto our farmers and our meat processors that they had to give up and close up shop. One of the most effective things they did was they lobbied to force it so that every single meat processor, a mom and pop shop, has to have an office that they pay for at the rate of $10,000 to $12,000 a month to the government in their little meat packaging place so that a full-time USDA inspector can be stationed at their building. And that forced out every small processor in the United States when prior to that regulatory initiative, it was just a regular health inspector that came in. We didn't have massive outbreaks. We didn't have big problems. What we had were monopolies that wanted greater control. And so they forced unnecessary regulation onto small businesses that they couldn't afford. And it forced them out of business. And now we're propping up entire economies with the work that used to be done here for more efficient and more costly food access. We are forfeiting our sovereignty and we're doing it at the behest of foreign interests because they're paying our politicians to do it.
And if people don't know this is happening, there's nothing they can do to stand up and stop it. So we've got a couple things that, you know, are coming down the pipe that we're trying to defend against. How can people defend against this stuff? We got the Save Our Bacon Act, which is overriding states' rights so that states can no longer extricate themselves from the global war on, you know, good meat, essentially is what it is. Really, it's a war on meat overall because it's a war on human flourishing, and meat is a core component of that. So they really want you just eating soy and being a pathetic cuck your whole life. So that's the ultimate down the line operation. But Not to get off course here. We've got the Save Our Bacon Act, trying to save the meat, packing industry or revitalize it here. You've got the fact that they're going to start spending pension funds on data centers, and we've got the data centers basically becoming immune to protest because people are being arrested for merely speaking out against it. How can we fight back against this? Well, what does our audience need to actually do to tangibly, you know, prevent this stuff from happening?
All right. So we have two big action items today. And one of them, I think, is, I mean, they're both really important right now. First of all, every sitting citizen in the United States has two members of the Senate that you can call right now and say that you want the Save Our Bacon Act stripped out of the farm bill. They're heading to markup in just a couple weeks. So that's what people can start doing right away. You guys can always do that at the link in my bio, but you guys can also look at who's my representative.gov, right? You can go and find if you need to contact you, especially, you can be calling them, emailing them.
Sorry to interrupt, but especially let your farmer friends know about this. Like if you're listening and you live around, people that raise cattle or pigs or any, you know, produce, you got to let them know because this stuff is probably being passed without even their knowledge. And they'd be the ones who would be, you know, tangibly affected by this and have a vested interest in preventing this type of thing from passing. So yes, call your senators. I think that's a great idea. And I everybody should be doing that as we speak. But in addition to that, spread the word to people who this is going to affect because they need to understand their livelihood is at risk here.
And I guess we're going to have a sandwich episode because when we pivoted from the data centers and the rating of the pensions, yes, your pension is going to be forced into these index funds if these IPOs are granted this valuation because the SEC made this sweetheart call that's going to grant them unlimited access to your money. And what a lot of people don't recognize is that that is only one part of the pension rating. And over on War Room, you and I have talked a lot about the fact that all 401ks are currently at risk because Trump passed an executive order back in October that he said was democratizing access to investment in the United States. This was lobbied for a decade by private equity, and no president was willing to do it, including Trump in his first term. He said it was lunacy, and he refused, by the way. And once the crypto bros joined forces with him, he capitulated and he did it. Well, so on this other side, we have this executive order that was passed back in October. That executive order was pitched to the American people as giving them access to the billionaires club. We're giving you access to the big money, the big access, the big gambles, but the big rewards, your 401ks, you're in the cool kids club now. What he never said in that executive order is you could always invest in private equity. You could always invest in private credit. You could always invest your 401k in crypto. You just never did because the fee structure is so high, it's impossible for you to make money. Okay, without spending between a minimum $3 million on the best performing, you know, portfolios and more likely $10 million on the lower performing portfolios, right? Which no one does that in a 401k. You do that in larger investment mechanisms. But unless you're spending millions of dollars, the fees are so high that you cannot make money. And prior to this, you could always invest that way if you wanted to. But if your fund manager did it, and each time your fund manager did it, what happened was they ended up losing entire groups of people's wealth. And you and all of those people formed a class action and you filed something called an ERISA lawsuit. ERISA lawsuits are managed by the Department of Labor. Okay. And these ERISA lawsuits would come and every single time that a fund manager badly invested your money with private equity, they would come in and you would file a class action and that fund manager would have to make your 401k whole. And that fear was sufficient to stop them from making reckless bets with your money. It created safety. It created security, long-term growth strategies, and a mechanism by which you could hold them accountable. And we've talked about immunity a lot. Well, if you look at Trump's executive order, which again, you could always invest your money in these mechanisms. He makes four paragraphs about you're going to get access to private equity. You're going to get access to private credit. You're going to get access to crypto. And in the very last paragraph, in very tiny language, it says, and I'm calling on the SEC and the DOL to pass new regulations that make it possible. Well, that's what they're doing. The SEC just did it by giving all of these data centers immediate access to the Mag 10 and all of the index funds that are going to force your pensions and your 401ks into buying in at the top of their Ponzi scheme, which is what it is right now. Right. And they're going to sell while you're buying at the top. They're going to be selling and making a killing because they've had private investment open for almost 10 months and they've been buying at the bottom. And then on the other side, you have the Department of Labor. Now, the Department of Labor was really what was most important. The Department of Labor had to pass a new rule that granted immunity to the fund managers. And that's exactly what they're doing. They've engaged in a rulemaking process and I sent over a link to it. The rulemaking process says that once approved, it will make it illegal for Americans to form class action ERISA lawsuits to hold fund managers accountable when they invest your money badly in private equity, private credit, or crypto. It's granting them immunity. And it has only one benchmark to ban your ability to bring a lawsuit. And that benchmark is moderate due diligence with zero definition for what that means. That could mean looking at a prospectus. That could mean sitting on the guy who runs that fund manager's yacht and getting a really sweetheart kickback compensation structure for recommending this to your investors, right? To your pension holders, your 401k holders, and looking at that prospectus and going, this feels moderately investigated. Mm. It could literally mean just that. And you are no longer able to hold them accountable when they invest your money in these 401ks and your 401ks, your pensions into these private equity and private credit markets, which are in a bubble that is bursting in real time, that is begging for a bailout right now of $12 trillion. Well, conveniently, right now in dry powder available in the 401k structures, there's about $12.8 trillion available. And so as long as they pass this rule, your 401k is going to be free range for these billionaires to get bailed out of their own bad investments. The same investments that Harvard and Yale have pulled out of, the same bad investments that JP Morgan just cut off lending to, the same bad investments that at Blue Owl, at BlackRock, at Blackstone have had to now halt withdrawals because there's a run on the banks because they're all bad investments in, wait for it, data centers that are all funded by private credit markets. And so there's this rulemaking process, and I'm sorry to say they kept it very quiet for a very long time. And so we only have until Monday to stop it. And that's a really, really short time frame. But your show has helped me stop two other rulemaking processes in the past, and we're here to stop this one. So right now at the Department of Labor, there's a rulemaking process, and the way rulemaking works is actually one of the places where we still have a lot of say. The way that it's statutized is that they have to post the rule, the proposed rule, and then Americans get given a couple months to give feedback. Now, a lot of billionaires have lobbied to make it really hard to find the opportunity to participate in this. So you have to click through quite a few things to get there, but I've made it easy. I've given you the immediate link, and the immediate link is posted at the top of my link in every one of my social media channels. And all you have to do is click the green leave a comment button. And you're going to go in and leave a comment and say, I do not support the enactment of this law. Americans deserve and have the constitutional right to bring lawsuits when our money is mismanaged, right? You can say that. You can write longer paragraphs. You can write whole statements. You can write an entire essay if you want. You can include up to 20 attachments. But we need to make it heard because I'm going to be honest, the crypto lobby has done a very good job of convincing everybody that they can't invest in crypto without this new rule. And so they've been flooding the comment section with like bot generated content. And so we need to out influence this. You can already invest in crypto. You can already invest in private equity and private credit. You will lose your money, but you can do that. But right now you at least have protection if somebody else invests it badly, and we need to protect that interest. And so people have to go and participate in this rulemaking process. And we only have until Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern time. And I'm calling on every single American to get in there and make your voice heard. And there's three ways you can do it. You can do it as a person. You can do it as an organization, or you can do it anonymously. I strongly encourage you to include your information, because once you submit your comment, it's going to be screened. There's an entire human screening division that will block out all of your identifying information. It will never be seen in the public forums, but they have to verify real people submitted comments to put back the proposal that explains what people want. Because once all the comments are received by Monday, it will go to a nonpartisan auditing firm, and they will tabulate what Americans want, and they will make the proposal back as to whether to enact it or to deny this rule, based on how many Americans that can be verified made their voices heard. Now, let's say that you're an American that has a 401k. You should submit as a person. Let's say you're a Girl Scout leader and your Girl Scouts are working on their smart money badge, and you guys have done some investigation and you think that this is not a good idea. You can submit as an organization. You could submit through your Rotary Club. You could submit through your Catholic Charities Board. You could submit through your local investment club. You could submit through all of those organizations, right? And you can also submit anonymously. I will continue to say you need a different email address for each submission, and I would never suggest submitting more than once. You do need a different email address for each.
So this is what it looks like. And there's the big green button, submit a public comment. So our audience has until Monday to do this, but it only takes a few minutes, and there's really no excuse not to do it today, right now. And then maybe tomorrow. How do we get here? Like, how do we find this link? I just want to give step-by-step instructions to our audience. Yeah. So there's no confusion, no excuses. How do they find that page?
Most, So that page literally is 30 clicks deep on a government website because they want lobbyists to be the only ones that know how to find it, because lobbyists submit these huge reports on why it should be enacted, right? But I've made it really easy. You can go to any one of my social media profiles, and the link in my bio, the top link is this form. You just one click and you're there.
So you got
to, you don't have to go through 30 clicks.
It's your link tree. You hit,
yep,
you,
it's my link tree, the very top link.
Okay. So at the Vino Mom on X, you can go to that, or you can go to linktree.com/Tiffany Cianci. But it's right there at the top. Fight to stop the bailout, fiduciary duties, and selecting designated investment alternatives. So I'm going to go ahead and tweet this out as well. So if you follow me at Harrison H. Smith, that will be my top tweet for the next little while. Because again, no excuses. No, well, I tried, but I couldn't quite find it. Boom, right there. Harrison H. Smith, click the button in the non-pinned first link, first tweet of mine, and that will take you right there. There's the link tree itself, and you can click that top box there to take you right there. So go right there, hit the big green button. Could not be more simple. Brilliant stuff. Okay, we only got 3 minutes left. What else do people need to know?
I mean, what I want people to recognize is that we've been convinced and conditioned to believe that voting is the only way we get to participate in government. There are so many ways we can stop so many of the things that have been corrupted in our government systems right now. This is one thing we still have, right? And this works. A lot of people think that when we do these things, it doesn't work. We were able to pass two new rules at the FTC over the last 2 years using this exact method with almost exclusively my followers and your followers, right? Our voice does still matter, and it matters statutorily, but there are also 1,000 other ways that your voice matters, right? In 26 states in the United States, we have what are called referendum laws. Now, if you know what a referendum is, it's where you can go and write a law, you can collect some signatures from your neighbors, and you can get it on the ballot circumventing your legislature, right? We have the ability to make ourselves heard. There are also 100,000 politicians in the United States each year that run unopposed, right? Because they've always had the job, they get to keep the job, and people keep paying them to stay there, and they get corrupted and they take money. Go run for office. Like, we've got to start participating. Every time I come here, I come with new ways that we can make a difference, we can change things, and it's working. I like to believe that we are showing your audience in real time that this bubbly little fairy of doom paired with you is making a difference. We stripped pesticide immunity out. We passed small business protections at the FTC. We are passing referendum laws against data centers right now. We can do this. And I'll help anyone that wants to. You want to run for office? Well, Massey, we just out-influenced their money. They sent Hegseth out there. Like, we got there a little bit later than we should have. But we also drown out their voices and doubled the amount of turnout at the polls. You know, if you look at Cornyn in Texas, he had a 30% landslide. We kept this one within 10 points. If we'd gotten there 3 weeks earlier, we could have changed everything. Every voice in America matters. Every voice. And everything we do matters. And while they've really worked very, very hard to convince us that we have to just take it and roll over, it's happening in real time that we're proving that's not true. Like, Maine and Hawaii right now are passing laws to overturn Citizens United. And they're headed to the Supreme Court, and it could work, right? Like, there are things that are happening in referendum all across the United States. In Maryland, we're overturning the data center regulations by citizen signature. We're not doing it by begging politicians that already took the money. We're just circumventing them. We're going around them. And we're running for office.
And that's the way to do it. And you see the effect that's having of, all over the country. People are trying to, cause the thing is, they can only do this if it's in secret without your awareness. And they try to do that. They try to slip it under the door before you realize what they're doing. We have to stay on top of it. You know, this is the cost of liberty. It is eternal vigilance. You have to be vigilant against this and not wait for them to give you permission to speak out against them or try to stop them. You have to try to stop them using whatever tools that you have at your disposal. And as dysfunctional as our system currently is, it still has these abilities for us to intervene as regular citizens and stop what the powerful want to do. It really is the beauty of the American system. We have to utilize that as well as we can. Tiffany, incredible as always, the bubbly little fairy of doom. Follow her on X at the Vino Mom, TiffanyCianci.com, and of course on Instagram at the Vino Mom as well. Thank you so much. We'll have to check in with you, see how we did here. You have until Monday. It's at the top of my X. It's on Tiffany's link tree. Go there, sign it, fill it out. Thank you for being with us once again, Tiffany.
Thanks always, Harrison.
Incredible as always, hardest working woman on social media. We'll be right back, folks, with Mary Tally Bowden, Dr. Mary Tally Bowden, talk about Ebola and other globalist schemes to take our rights. Stay with us, folks. It's the Alex Jones Show, alexjoneslive.com.
These new data centers will oversee everyone in the galaxy. I will be in full control.
Power levels are stable. Proceed with the install. Copy that. Installing the module now. Connection confirmed. All green.
Cable secured. Power to the cluster. Initiating boot sequence. Component locked. Running diagnostics. Archive systems online. Report to command.
Construction team, report status. Power grid stable, TK-421. Cabling complete, no faults. Proceed to phase two for the Empire.
Things are going according to plan. The Emperor will be happy.
The Empire demands perfection.
Status report. Any anomalies?
Diagnostics are clear, sir.
Proceed with the calibration. Watch for fluctuations.
I find your desire for privacy insignificant. The Empire's new data network will observe every corner of the galaxy, every signal, every act of disloyalty.
A disturbance in the Force there is. Feel it, you can.
Those who obey have nothing to fear. Those who resist will be terminated.
It's not it. Like, I don't like Zionism. To me, it's the same way I don't like communism. Jewish people are some of my best friends, but there's just seemingly a very pervasive PSYOP. I think it's the biggest one out there right now, and it's the PSYOP on Israel. I'll get to a fun story about a proud Israeli citizen treating America like garbage here in just a second. But first, there's a PSYOP expert. I just want to share this real quick because I think we're living in a time where speaking truth as you see it, your best discernment of what truth is, having the courage to speak your truth, how you see the world, instead of being gaslit, falling for lies, hypocrisy, corruption, instead of pledging willful ignorance, speaking truth, I think, is more important than any other time in history. That I've been alive anyway. Yet the intimidation factor has never been higher. I mean, people will treat you like you are just a vile human. If you're just like, dude, I think the Israel government's corrupt. By the way, I think my government's corrupt too. Drawing the distinction, yeah, I'm criticizing the corrupt government. Netanyahu, he literally has a corruption trial. He keeps pushing back and we can't call the killing of children. So I just want to say, for anybody who feels intimidated, like, hey, people are going to smear me. I see it happen to people all the time when they're online and they're speaking for America, which means you kind of have to say, what's this Israel stuff about? I just want to say, man, the version of you on your deathbed, what would you regret? What would you be proud of? And I don't think any of us will ever wind up on our deathbed saying, you know what I am grateful for? I am grateful I did not have the courage to speak truth while I still had the right to speak truth. I think maybe the reverse would be true. The version of us on our deathbed, hopefully many years, who would feel more fulfilled in the course, the fork in the road where we would not have regret. Instead, we'd have fulfillment would be, yeah, I had the courage to speak truth. By the way, we're not even asking ourselves to do anything courageous.
We're not asking ourselves, like, pick up a weapon and fight for your country. Put yourself in harm's way. We're not even asking you to do that. I'm not being asked to do that. We're asking ourselves, I'm asking you, and I'm challenging myself to a greater degree, to simply have the little bit of courage it takes to let your words be aligned with how you actually see the world. And not let intimidation contort your words or even contort your thinking. I love to navigate life when there's a choice like, holy shoot, I just posted a video on kind of like what Zionism is. And people are calling me an anti-Semite. It's getting censored from YouTube. There's a fork in the road, and we all have our version of this fork in the road. We can choose to cower down, be the person who lives on our knees. Or we can choose to have the courage and do the version of ourselves who's doing the accounting, our life audit, many years from now, who looks back and says, that was a life well lived. I'm glad I made that choice to speak my mind at that fork in the road.
That's J.P. Sears on the Alex Jones Show yesterday, the day before, I guess. I just thought that was an incredibly inspiring segment. And it's really not that hard. And the thing is, the fear that's inculcated, the fear of, you know, stepping on somebody's toes or being seen as something that you're not, you got to get over that and reject the imposition onto your mind of other people's interpretations of what you're saying. Why would anybody feel scared about saying, I don't like that they kill children? There's nothing to be scared of. And anybody who's opposing you or trying to make you feel bad for saying stuff like that, they're the bad guys. You have moral superiority here. Wield it like a weapon. Don't be scared. Don't be frightened. Be powerful. It's within you.
Thanks for having me. Before I start, wanted to pitch a couple of the products there for the listeners. The bovine colostrum has been fantastic. My mom had tremendous results, similar to the results your mom had with her hair and skin. Methylene blue, the mental clarity, the focus has been amazing. I just found that I just needed to up the dose a little bit from the recommendation, and then that really hit. So definitely helps to support the broadcast. Alex, the reason you're so successful and the reason so many people chime in is because you have the best guests. That does include Victor Boot, but I will reference the legendary Gerald Celente. What does he say time after time? When there's nothing left, they take us to war.
The bovine colostrum is incredible. The methylene blue, you fund us. You're our funders, not the Israelis or the Muslims or the Russians or the U.S. government. You fund us at thealexjonesstore.com. And the new news site for all the feeds and articles is alexjoneslive.com. And on Rumble, rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. We'll be right back.
The program leftists failed to silence. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex on this Friday broadcast. And I'm very, very excited to welcome my guest, Mary Tally Bowden. She's a board certified, she's certified in something I can't even pronounce. That shows you how advanced she is. After completing her residency at Samford University, she practiced at Memorial Northwest before founding direct care clinic Breathe MD in 2019, which operates as a cash pay model to avoid insurance constraints. And I'm happy to say, Dr. Bowden, that the first I heard of you was when my parents were patients of yours. They're in Houston. So they were very satisfied customers and told me about you. And I've watched very happily as your star has risen and you've become this, fixture in the alternative medicine world that, really brings along a lot of expertise and success along with you. You can follow Dr. Bowden at Mary Bowden MD. And she's recently come out with a book called Dangerous Misinformation, The Virus, The Treatments, and The Lies. And she's having some trouble getting it on bookshelves. We'll tell you all about it. Not because it's not a great book, but because it's too good. It says things that certain people don't want out there. Welcome to the show, Doctor.
Thanks so much, Harrison. Great to see you.
Very good to see you. So tell us about your book and tell us what happened with Barnes & Noble. I saw a clip and we could play it, but we have you here so you can tell our audience what happened with this book, Dangerous Misinformation.
Yeah, it came out last week and yeah, I was hoping it would get on some bookshelves. You can easily buy it online on Amazon. And actually, to be fair, Barnes & Noble is carrying it online. But my publisher asked them to put on the bookshelves and it was quietly declined, but not surprising. You know, this is cancel culture still. Yeah. What, JP was talking about just hit home so hard is that you just, you know, I got canceled for speaking the truth, right? And this is the book details my saga during the pandemic. But there's, you know, the truth is I'm just trying to push it out. And I know the pandemic is long gone, but they're still using the same tactics and very similar to what we're seeing with Israel. You can't say anything that's considered anti-Israel. And these are people, it's even harder now because it's people that are on our team. You know, it's a lot easier when the Democrats are in control, but now it's this, you have to be loyal to Trump or else.
Right.
And, you know, I'm very frustrated because these COVID shots are still being given and 7 million children have gotten these shots since Trump took office. But, you know, Team Trump will not allow you to call that out. And when you call that out, you get, you know, shut down very quickly, at least on Twitter or on X.
Well, and sort of the failure so far of the MAHA agenda has been one of the most glaring failures of Trump's second administration. Obviously, the Epstein files, the Iran war. I mean, I think these would be at the top of most people's lists. But MAHA was a major reason why a lot of, especially people that wouldn't have voted for Trump otherwise, they saw RFK Jr. They are on board with the alternative medicine stuff. Although I don't even like calling it alternative because there's just that bad connotation with that. This is real medicine. This is non-pharmaceutical medicine. Maybe it would be a better way of putting it, even though there are some pharmaceuticals in there, it's not about maximizing their profits. It's about maximizing the health of the human being. That was the promise that, at least in part, helped usher Trump into the White House. And yet, where is it now? It doesn't seem to exist.
Right. I mean, Kennedy rose to power on the backs, on the heels of the pandemic, right? That's what garnered so much support behind him. And then he got in office. He dropped out. At the behest of Callie Means, who has become the leader of MAHA, dropped out of the race, joined Trump, and since he took office, though, he will not say anything about the COVID shots. In fact, the FDA, they just approved the next version of the COVID shot for the upcoming COVID season. And honestly, I can't even remember the last time I treated a COVID patient. But they're still giving these to Americans or putting Americans in harm's way. 29 states recommend that all babies get 3 COVID shots by the time they're 9 months old. And 20% of healthcare providers are pushing the shots on their patients. And so people keep arguing, oh, well, just give people a choice. You know, we need to give them the freedom to choose, but they're not getting informed consent. They're not being told that the risk of these shots far outweigh any benefit. And I'm not even aware of a benefit. So this is a product that should have been pulled off the market a very long time ago. Any other product would have, based on what we saw. They had over 700 people die within the first month of rollout. And now we're seeing this explosion in cancer cases. They've been sitting on cancer data since 2022. They recently came out with 2023 data, showed a huge increase in cancer in people under 50. And that I suspect, or I'm pretty certain based on what doctors on the ground are seeing, that the 2024-2025 data is going to be shocking.
Yeah, and you'll see stories, you know, in mainstream press going, what explains turbo cancer? I mean, they'll acknowledge the turbo cancer. They'll acknowledge the rise. And I saw an article the other day that was trying to blame, miscarriages and negative outcomes to pregnancy on like abortion law changes. And then you go in and do the numbers and you go, well, wait, they're counting deaths that happened in like 2022, a year before the abortion restrictions were in place. So there's only one cause that this could be, and it would have to be the COVID vaccine. So in a weird way, they're reporting on the consequences of the vaccine, I believe. What we're seeing is the consequence of the vaccine, but they're like scratching their head and they won't acknowledge the obvious, you know, suspect in the room, which would be the vaccine. They're trying to come up with all these other reasons that turbo cancer is exploding and miscarriages exploded, you know, following the rollout of the vaccine. They'll admit on the consequences, but they want to cover up and act stupid, like they're acting dumb, like they don't understand that it was the vaccine. But they can only hold this on for so long. I mean, when are we going to get the full acknowledgement, do you think, of the true damage that the vaccines have done to us and are continuing to do to us?
I don't know. Yeah, a lot of this has to happen to people firsthand. So we are seeing people in Trump's administration getting cancer, right? Pam Bondi. We see Tulsi Gabbard's husband. We saw Susie Wiles' cancer. So it just keeps coming out. And oftentimes, people who are very headstrong, the only way they're going to learn the lesson is if it happens to themselves. So maybe that's what it's going to take. But I'm fairly certain that Trump is keeping Kennedy from taking action on this. I don't have any inside information, but we know that Kennedy was on our side prior to gaining power. Frustrating to me. I think, you know, if it were me in Kennedy's shoes, I would have recruited all my faithful lieutenants and put them in office. And then, you know, I would have gone scorched earth and did what needed to be done, knowing I would lose the power. But when you have your lieutenants in place, then they can accomplish all the other things that need to be done. But he's taken the opposite approach. He's slow rolling. He's, you know, taking the low hanging fruit, changing the food pyramid and addressing, you know, food in the hospitals and things like that, and taking Diet Coke away from SNAP recipients. But the pandemic touched every single American. It is the greatest public health crisis of our generation. And it's very frustrating that the administration is acting like it never happened. But the consequences of that are this complete lack of trust that people have in the system. My son broke his wrist the other day, and I was 5 hours away, and he had to go to I got a text that said ambulance, and hospital and fentanyl. And I was just beside myself, and I was 5 hours away. And, this was in West Texas in Uvalde, at the Frio River. And, you know, I was worried about his injury, but I was more worried about what they were going to do to him in the hospital. And Thankfully, I had three moms there, very like-minded. They recorded the whole thing, and it all turned out great. And actually, it exceeded my expectations. But that's what's going on, is that, you know, we should not be worried about getting emergency treatment at a hospital. But that's where we are because of what happened during the pandemic, and the administration has done nothing to correct it.
Right. Well, and that's the thing about the fact that, you know, the perjury charge for Dr. Fauci just expired. I don't understand how that, I mean, to me, what he's done is committed crimes against humanity. So I don't understand, you know, how that could expire after 5 years. The perjury was, you know, in pursuit of the crimes he was committing, right? He lied about the cover up. About the crimes of, you know, creating and releasing this virus and then covering up the origin of it so they could, you know, get people to take vaccines. I mean, that's the crime. So I don't understand how that statute of limitations has expired. I don't think it has. But, you know, when it expired, it's like they're going to do it again. You're supposed to punish these people so that they don't try to do this again. And, yeah, to ensure the American people of, hey, if somebody abuses the fear that they've created in you, if they, you know, come up with a scheme to get you to take a product so they can make money, we're going to hold them to account. So, you know, you can trust our system. If people abuse it, it's possible they abuse it, but we will hunt them down and hold them to account for it. That would go a lot of ways in, you know, refurbishing the trust that people have lost for the medical industry in particular. But really, it's about saying you're not going to be allowed to do this again, because they haven't punished anybody that did it to us the first time, and it looks an awful lot like they're gearing up for the next round. Hantavirus was the big one recently. Ebola, I see like these little signals. They're not making a big deal out of it yet, but people in the Congo are like burning clinics down who are there to treat Ebola, and I don't know which side I'm on necessarily. I don't know, you know, what they're learning that would make them want to burn the clinics down, but I instinctively am on their side. I think it's a good thing the clinics are being burned down. Maybe that's a bad reaction, but it seems like they're trying to do it again. And this is going to happen because we didn't punish the people the first time. Do you think Ebola is a big deal? Do you think we should be making a big deal, bigger deal out of it? Or do you think it's being, you know, pumped up to cause the fear? What's your take on the new Ebola outbreak?
I mean, no one wants to get Ebola. It's a horrible virus.
Right.
It is, you know, my gut is that this is all hyperbole. You know, the area of the world where this is occurring is third world to the infinite degree. I mean, there's civil war going on. It's in a rural area. They have very poor health infrastructure to begin with. And yeah, the numbers are not that high. Now, I guess, yes, they could climb, but the last real big pandemic like the, or not pandemic, outbreak, it was, you know, much, much worse. It was 28,000 people became infected. So we're nowhere near that. It may become a problem in that area of the world, but I'm not worried at all that it's going to come to the United States and create a big outbreak in the United States.
But it is one of those where, you know, unlike COVID, where, you know, it really wasn't dangerous to little kids and, you know, you could basically treat it like the flu and have a pretty dang good chance, like 99%+ chance of surviving and being okay on the other side. Ebola, it's a whole different story, right? And I wonder, I mean, we saw the way that they were willing to destroy people's lives. They were willing to try to crush people like yourself under COVID. I'm like, these people are so crazy. Maybe they will weaponize Ebola. Maybe the next time it really will be a deadly and horrifying disease. And, you know, maybe they're setting us up all to be suckers, not trust. I just think it's so dangerous what they're able to do with diseases now, and we are doing nothing to try to contain that. And it seems as though we have no ability to effectively combat the viruses in any way. And this was a big complaint we had about the WHO, you know, under COVID. They let it spread all over the world before they took their first step. If their whole point of existing is to identify and contain emergent diseases, where the hell were they? And then with the hantavirus thing on the ship, they let everybody get off the ship and go home. And it's like, you know, we're paying billions of dollars to these international organizations and they do less than nothing when it comes to these outbreaks. The monkeypox was another one. It was contained. It was on a small island in the, you know, Canary Islands off Spain, and they let everybody go home and spread it around. But that sort of fell flat when they tried to make that the next pandemic. But I mean, are they even trying to combat this stuff? And I wouldn't be scared of Ebola normally, but it seems like they'd be willing to introduce Ebola into this population if they thought they could benefit somehow.
Yeah, I saw that the World Health Organization leader, Tedros, is against shutting down the borders to contain this, which makes it's common sense. I don't understand that at all. Now Ebola is so lethal that it is hard to spread in normal, you know, first world countries. The people in Africa, there's death rituals where they touch the deceased, right. And they have this poor sanitation situation. So people need to keep in mind that it's very unlikely that it could spread far and wide in the United States. I'm just not worried, but I think the biggest risk is that they spread the fear and they use that fear to control us like
Absolutely.
They did during the pandemic.
Absolutely. And speaking of the fear they used to control us and just going back to the beginning of our conversation today, the book, of course, is Dangerous Misinformation, The Virus, The Treatments, and The Lies by Dr. Mary Bowden. And you can follow her on X at Mary Bowden MD. Do you regret anything, doctor? Do you regret taking this choice to stand up against the medical industry? Wouldn't your life be so much better if you just kept your head down and did as you were told and were just an anonymous, you know, person in the medical industry in Houston? So do you have any regrets about telling the truth? What advice would you give to people who maybe find themselves in a situation similar to yours in the future?
I have no regrets. Now, I didn't always say that. It was hard at first. It was very hard because I was a mom of four kids, a quiet solo practitioner. I did not anticipate ending up on CNN and Washington Post and but I have absolutely no regrets. I told my teenage son that the other day. I was like, actually glad all this happened, as difficult as it's been, because it gives me a purpose, and it, now I feel so strong. I mean, when people criticize me online, it doesn't bother me at all. And it allows you to speak the truth. It's very empowering once you get through all of it. It's not easy, but once you get through it, it's wonderful. It's very freeing.
It is. I can't imagine, you know, living the other way, but honestly, when you stand up against these big, powerful forces and win, it's like there's really nothing that feels better than that. I can't imagine anything else. Speaking of the big, powerful forces, I want to go to this video. Ironically, right before you came on, I saw this video and asked the crew to bring it in. Pediatricians are being incentivized directly by HMOs to force vaccines. This has been going on for a while, but it's still going on, you know, to a very heavy degree. I was wondering if you could give us your insight on it as somebody who's probably experienced this type of pressure. But let's go to this video now. This is from The High Wire, pediatricians incentivized by HMOs. Let's watch.
What is the truth? Because I hear back and forth. I mean, do pediatricians get incentivized with percent vaccination of their...
Yes. Dr. Paul Thomas has done a very good video on that, and many other pediatricians have followed. Maybe Dr. Hooker could answer better on that.
They're typically incentivized directly by HMOs. HMOs buy and sell vaccines, so vaccines are big businesses for HMOs. But the incentivization is usually anywhere from $200 to $600 per fully vaccinated patient, as long as their vaccines, a certain percentage of their practice is fully vaccinated. So some pediatricians can make upwards to $1 million or more a year just in those incentives.
Wow.
I've also heard stories of pediatricians basically firing patients because they won't get vaccinated, because that's
correct.
We hear that story over and over again. And also the lies that the pediatrician tell us, that our baby will die if we don't get vitamin K at birth. The baby will bleed out before it gets to the car. And these stories, if you don't get the HPV vaccine, then you will die of cancer. These parents have told us these stories, and they're the same over and over again. How can they get away with lying like that to us, the parents?
It's absolutely horrifying. And just knowing that what should be considered a sacred profession, being a doctor, I mean, you take this oath to, you know, should really be seen as something elevated above normal professions. And yet it's degraded down to this salesman of poison. It's disgusting. Were you ever pressured like that in your experience as a doctor?
Well, I don't contract with HMOs or insurance companies, but I think the most popular tweet I ever posted was, you know, I treated over 6,000 COVID patients, and if I had given all those patients the COVID shot, I would have made $1.5 million from this one. It was Blue Cross Blue Shield. It's all laid out on paper where the bonus structure for giving those shots. And yeah, personally, my 18-year-old son went to our pediatrician, and I wasn't there at the appointment, and he was pressured into getting the meningitis shot based on false data that the doctor scared him and told him he had a 25% chance of dying if he got meningitis. He didn't give him any of the potential risk about getting the shot. Didn't tell him that if something goes wrong and he's permanently injured, he has no recourse against the drug company. It's definitely a problem, especially now. You know, the COVID shot, not as much as an issue, but just general vaccines, people are much more vaccine hesitant, and doctors, pediatricians are firing these patients. I have patients coming to me very often about that problem that they're having.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can be hard to stand up against the pressure if you're not, you know, armed with the information. It's sort of the best example I often bring up when talking about like how you need the information at hand, or you need to be confident enough in your understanding of it to where when they're sitting there going, you have a 25% chance of dying, you can hit them back with, no, I don't. I know the stats. Or just, look, I think you're lying to me and I'm not going to do it. You have to have the confidence to stand up to it, because that pressure is real. And when it's coming from somebody in a lab coat, it does something to our brain. We want to believe them and we want to, you know, make the right choice. And it's that pressure that they wield against us to get us to go along with the poison shots. It's absolutely disgusting. And yet they're making bank off of it. It really is pathetic. So again, people can get the book Dangerous Misinformation, The Virus, The Treatments, and The Lies by Dr. Mary Bowden. You can follow her at Mary Bowden MD on X. How else can people support you? What else do people need to know about the persistent threat of, you know, the latest new novel virus that's going to lock us all in our homes. What do people need to know?
Well, I have an organization called Americans for Health Freedom, and it's been going for a couple of years now. And our main project, our main focus is to get politicians who are willing to state that the COVID shot should be pulled off the market. And, you know, it's sort of a litmus test. People criticize me for being this one issue voter, but it's so hard to find the not pediatricians, politicians who are willing to state this. It is so controversial. But as of now, we have 299 elected officials. We have about 55 candidates who are running for office. Iowa is a big election coming up next week. We actually have three people running for governor in Iowa who have signed our pledge.
Oh, wow.
It's a grassroots effort, but we've gotten, you know, in the last Texas primary, we had the AG race. Chip Roy was the first to sign it. And then Mays Middleton, who knew about the pledge but wouldn't sign it. He did join on a week before the primary just because he felt the pressure. And we can all do that online and pressure these people to stand up and call for these dangerous products to be pulled.
Hey, and get them to denounce the stuff before the lobbyists get a chance to get their hooks in them. You got to get them early. Mary Tyler Bowden, thank you so much for being here with us at Mary Bowden MD on X.
I'm so excited about the Alex Jones Network. I'm so excited to expand it. The bad guys are in trouble. Hell, we might even get InfoWars back, but who knows? But I couldn't have stood against this tyranny and fought them without your support. But a lot of people, not the majority, but 20-30%, believe the propaganda of the national news that we're off the air. And friends, family, neighbors, people at the gas station, Alex, I'm so sorry you're off the air. I'm so sorry, you know, the Onion runs your company. They didn't get it a year and a half ago with the fake auction. They didn't get it this time. They're blocked in court. They're in a lot of trouble, okay? We're winning. But I need funds for the defense and the offense and for the network and for everything we're doing. And I need your word of mouth to tell your email list, your text message list, your neighbors, your friends, your family. Hey, Alex Jones is verboten, forbidden info. He knows what he's talking about.
Alex Jones called this years ago. Years ago.
Here is the URL, alexjoneslive.com. He's on weekdays, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Harrison Smith after that. We're going to bring more shows on. But we need your support, your word of mouth, your prayer. You are everything, and your financial support at alexjonesstore.com. So listen to me. We have ultramethylene blue tincture, capsules, and now the gummies that are a concentrate of already the strongest best methylene blue. So look out when you get them. But they're selling out, more coming in a month or so. We have plenty of the tincture and the capsules, but not the gummies. If you want them, there's probably 3 or 4 days left of them. Get them now at thealexjonesstore.com. Separately, I can do hours on this. Just go to Wikipedia even. Go to the UN website. Even our enemies admit it. There's an average 15 IQ point reduction in the West because of lack of iodine in the soil and in our foods. Iodine is so good for women, children, adults, pregnant women, but especially older people. But most iodine is a bound iodine to another element. Atomic means on the periodic table, it is pure. We're the only people that put out the pure iodine. And we have it, T3 trifecta iodine at thealexjonesstore.com. Get yours now. I got my iced tea right here. I take it about every 2 days. I'm going to take a dropper full of this bad boy. And this is so good for your brain, your clarity, your cells. It's essential. If you don't get iodine, you die. Again, you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you're dead. Don't have water for 4 days, you're dead. Don't have food for a month or so. Most person dies. You know, unless you're super fat and you live 2 months or whatever. The point is, that's because you're not getting all the essential nutrients and vitamins. Iodine is one of the essential things. Look it up. And the number one cause of cognitive disability, officially, even the World Health Organization, is iodine deficiency. So get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com and be the reason this network continues on and can expand. You're funding folks that fight for your future and our own futures together, trying to stop a new war, trying to stop new pandemics, trying to stop the left, trying to take back civilization. It takes funds to do that. So we sell great products, so it's a 360 win. The only way we fail is you don't take action. Take action now, thealexjonesstore.com.
Today we celebrate the first glorious anniversary of the Information Purification Directives.
Order is the only path to stability.
Compliance is the only path forward.
Alex Jones is a fringe voice and a crackpot. Our unification of thought is more powerful a weapon than any fleet or army on Earth.
We have created, for the first time in all history, a garden of pure ideology. War is peace.
On May 1st, 2026, Alex Jones will launch his new network, and you will see that the answer to 1984 is still and will always be 1776.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Patriots' choice and globalists' dread. Welcome to the Alex Jones Show.
This is the Alex Jones Show. AlexJonesLive.com is the URL to share to your friends and family. It is where you find our great reports, our live shows, how you can find the articles that we post. Of course, AlexJonesLive.com. You're going to want to subscribe to us on Rumble as well. At The Alex Jones Show Live on Rumble, and at The War Room Live on Rumble as well. Follow us there. You can follow me at Harrison H. Smith. Follow Alex at Real Alex Jones on X. We're actually going to be doing a Moonbase Live episode tonight, myself and Lebanon John, so make sure you're following us at Harrison H. Smith at Moonbase Live on Rumble as well. We're going to be getting into the Middle East in a very strong way, as well as some exciting announcements. We also have Off Limits News with NRX Studios. New episode comes out today of that. So this weekend, if you're feeling the absence of your old pal Harrison, there's plenty out there for you to find and enjoy and be edified, educated, at least hopefully entertained. If nothing else, hopefully you're entertained by all of this. And if you are, if you think what we do here is valuable, giving the voice to the voiceless, supporting stories and telling narratives that are ignored or downplayed by mainstream outlets, I hope you support us, because we cannot do this without you. We do not have billionaires with bottomless pockets, you know, keeping us afloat. We depend entirely on you, which is a good thing. I'm not complaining about that. It keeps us sharp, and it really does. I honestly, it's a pressure every single show. Like, the idea of phoning it in, the idea of, well, we'll just, you know, do whatever. It never even enters into the mind. It feels like every time we go live, every time I see that, you know, number countdown to 11 a.m. Central, or I'm doing War Room 3 p.m. Central, it's like, we gotta bring it. We gotta deliver to you what you expect of us, because we know that you're not just supporting us out of the kindness of your hearts because you think we're great guys. You expect something of us. You expect us to bring you the information that you need to know. You expect us to be delivering a high energy program, and we understand that we don't deserve your support without providing something in return, and we bring that same philosophy to the products. And we don't expect you to buy a product just because you like us. You buy the product because they're fantastic products and because they actually work, because we want you coming back again and again. Just like if you tune in and watch a show randomly, if it's the first time you've ever watched us, I hope that every single show is the type of show that would bring people back for more. That, you know, if it just happens to be it's your first time tuning in and we're just slacking off and not putting on a good show, then, you know, why would you ever come back? It's the same idea with the supplements. If you buy a supplement, it may be the first time you've ever bought it, and, you know, we can't have one bad supplement and a bunch of other good ones. They all have to be perfect, just like all of our stories have to be perfect. Because not only do we know that we have a discriminating audience that, you know, is our working people, working class, who, when they buy something from us, we know that it's a sacrifice for them. It can be. It's not really, because you're getting a fantastic product. So really, it's just purchasing a product. It's not really that sacrificial, but you could spend your money elsewhere. We understand that. We want to be worthy of it. We want you coming back for more. And we don't cut corners, because that is a path to total destruction. But it's a good thing. It's a good thing to have this type of pressure. And maybe that's just me. Maybe that's just my personality defect. But I think it's sort of a human thing. That like, you know, if you're just going to get paid anyway, why should you work all that hard? If it doesn't really matter what the outcome is, why should you put in the extra effort? I kind of like having the pressure, you know? I don't know how good I would be at putting a show on every day if I didn't know it started at 11 a.m. exactly and that it was programmed to start without me if I wasn't here. And I got to be here to do it. It's like I need that pressure. Some of us need that pressure. It'd be easy to just be lazy if we didn't have that pressure. So the pressure is a good thing. We put it on ourselves and we hope that we live up to your expectations. And I have a bunch of videos to get to in this final segment. Some videos I've sort of been holding on to for the weeks. I haven't had a good place to play and we'll play them now. I think we'll start with clip number 9 here. This is a resident of Frisco, Texas, which has been the site of a lot of protest against the Islamification of our state. And apparently the Muslims are fighting back in the most offensive way possible. I think this is crazy that this type of thing is even suggested to be happening right now. It's a march against white people that's happening in Frisco, Texas, which I don't think I should have to tell you was created and is populated primarily by white people. So, again, there's... If you had a bunch of migrants that came here and that loved this country and that at least felt pressure enough to pretend to not be hostile foreigners, I could work with you. We could work together a little bit. No country in the world should put up with a bunch of foreigners coming to their homeland and holding marches against their native people. Every single person involved in this should be deported with prejudice immediately, if not imprisoned, because who the hell do you think you are? And that's sort of the mindset I think we need to capture. I think we need to reclaim the who the hell do you think you are mindset here in America. The this is America, it's ours. You need permission to be here, be on your best behavior. That's the attitude we need to have because these people won't just give you respect. You have to demand it. And if you are, and it's not being respectful for them, to them to be, you know, a supplicant to them, to be submissive to them. They don't respect that. They don't say, oh, well, you know, these people are being so kind to us and, you know, our homeland is such trash and theirs is so wonderful and we want to be a part of theirs. I don't know why. They just don't feel that way. So that's okay. They don't have to feel that way, but they do have to show us respect. And that's what we need to demand. And if they don't give it to us, then they can leave. We have what they want. They don't have anything we want. They don't have anything we need. We, in fact, we're doing better without them. So the idea that we now have to put up with their outrages is outrageous, and we shouldn't put up with it, and we shouldn't stand for it, and we shouldn't allow this to proceed. That's how I feel. Let's go to clip 9 now.
It is getting insanely dangerous around Frisco, Texas, y'all. The next city council is on June 2nd here, and at 5 o'clock on that day, they're going to have a rally against the rednecks, which I don't know how many rednecks are left in the Frisco area, probably like 5 or 6. So basically, it's a march against the white man is what they're going to have at 5 o'clock p.m. June 2nd at the Frisco City Council outside. It's getting really heated. There's a lot of people who are mad. There's a lot of people who are going to show up for their side. This is not a good setup, y'all. And I beg and implore anybody on that side who is for this to stop and to not do it. Nobody wants to see anybody get hurt. Nobody condones violence. Nobody wants that there. The issue is y'all are invading our home, coming over, taking our jobs, taking our houses, making it more expensive for us to live here in so many different ways. And now you are rubbing it in our faces. And that is going to piss off a lot of people who have stayed quiet so far.
Maybe this is what we need. I, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe I've reversed my, maybe I'm in favor of this. Maybe it needs to be put in people's faces what's actually happening here and how these people actually feel about us. Because for every, you know, 10 people that you get pretending to love America, pretending to, you know, be offended if you're like, you're just a foreigner that's, you know, here to benefit your people. They're like, what? Us? Me? I can't believe it. It's mostly an act. Like, but for every 10 people you have putting that act on, you will get one of them just being like, yeah, we're here to take you over. We're here to conquer you. You're idiots for letting us in and we're going to make you pay. And you've got to ask the question. It's, you know, there's sort of a string of continuity you can draw between this and other, you know, similar acts of tolerance that we've been subjected to, like transgenderism. Sure, for every 10 people you get saying, I just want to use the women's restroom because it's how I identify and I feel uncomfortable in the men's restroom, putting that act on, you get one person that's just like, I get to put a dress on and go film women in the bathroom. I'm going to do that. And the question is, how much tolerance is worth the risk? Is it worth it to bring in 11 people if one of them is a psychotic that despises you? I think you keep all of them out. I think it's not worth the risk. And sure, you can say it's unfair to those 10 people, but we don't owe them crap. We don't owe them anything. We don't have to believe them. We don't have to be suckers. And you're not a good person for being taken advantage of. There's nothing moral or upstanding about being a sucker, about being the victim of a con artist. And that's what we need to realize. We need to realize these people are not here to benefit us. They're not here to uplift us. They're not here to fill in, you know, gaps in our supply line that we're missing. They're here to take over. So maybe them marching around telling everybody they're here to take over, maybe that'll wake people up who are still sleeping. Maybe that'll make people aware of what the real intentions of these groups and these people actually is. And has absolutely nothing to do with love of your culture. It's a desire for your material goods. That's all it is. And I don't think this should be allowed to go on. It's outrageous that it would even be suggested, and it's outrageous that it would be allowed to go on. No other. I just feel stupid. Do I need to say it? Do I need to say that white people will not be allowed to hold a F brown people march through the city? Obviously. But do you realize how? I mean, whatever. It's like, if you don't get it, I can't explain it to you. That's basically it. That's where I'm at this point. If you don't get it, I can't, and I'm not willing to try to explain to you why it's different to have a local native population protesting against their deliberate replacement versus the imported population, the foreign guests, holding a FU natives protest on their land. We don't need to put up with this. There's no moral benefit to it. They're just scam artists and bad people, and we just need to kick them out of our country. So it's a local man named Zul Muhammad, a Muslim community member, is organizing a rally against rednecks at 5 p.m. outside Frisco Hall on June 2nd. The event is framed by people in Texas as a march against white people or conservatives in response to recent city council meetings. The reason this is happening is because multiple contentious council meetings got heated when speakers like Jake Lang gave a strong anti-immigrant speeches. So they're literally saying, screw you to the natives who are dissatisfied at their homeland being literally sold out from under them. So I don't know. We might need to visit that. I might need to be there. Because that's infuriating. And I hope everybody embraces their redneck pride and goes out and be the rednecks they think you are. That's my advice. Be the rednecks. Be the hillbillies that they like to portray you as. Because you're not. You're decent, intelligent, upstanding people, as most of even the lowest classes in America once were. But sometimes it's okay to let the barbarian out. Sometimes it's necessary to go savage, to deal with savage people. So I say embrace the savagery, embrace the redneck within, bring it to fruition, and make your ancestors proud. Let's go to clip 15 here. In California, the LA mayoral race is really heating up, and it shows some polls show Pratt now pulling ahead of his competition. This video is titled, LA mayoral candidate Spencer Pratt just dropped this bombshell on Gavin Newsom and Karen Bass after she got Newsom's endorsement. Let's go now to clip number 15.
It's not shocking because they're alleged criminal partners. Not only did they work together in their negligence in burning down 7,000 houses and 12 people alive, but they're both complicit in laundering what, $24 billion to actually increase homelessness? Newsom and Karen Bass make up stats. Those are not real numbers. Anybody with eyeballs in the state of California or Los Angeles knows that there has not been a reduction in one homeless person. Actually, there's been an increase of naked drug addict zombies in front of every kid's playground, every kid's school, every coffee shop. So that is, of course, because they're, you know, they both should be in jail together.
Yeah, I mean, he ain't wrong. I mean, he's not wrong. Again, you know, it's just one of those things. $24 billion and the problem only gets worse. You spend $24 billion to do something, and at the end of it, it's less done than when you started. I mean, is there anywhere outside of government that such a thing could even possibly happen? $24 billion. So, why aren't they in prison? Why aren't all of these people in prison? And the answer is because everybody's in on it, because this has been going on for literally a century in this country. And anybody that would have stood up against it has been systematically excluded from power for that reason in particular. And I thought this was actually pretty brilliant. Full kudos and credit to Louder with Crowder, Stephen Crowder and his team. Because I really hadn't put this together yet. So Zoran Mamdani is basically doing a thing, and it's sophisticated in one part in particular, because he's forcing landowners, landlords in New York, who they grade on an arbitrary metric as having failed to uphold their duty as landlord, to sell the building, but they're not selling it to the city, where the city could then operate the building and get the money as, you know, be a nonprofit, basically like tax income, and just be operated by the city. Or you could just have it give to the city, and then the city could sell it to a different landlord and just take the money back into the city. There are lots of ways that this could be done that could facilitate ownership transferring to a better landlord, or even benefit the city in particular. But that's not what they're doing. They're forcing landlords to sell the buildings to socialist cooperatives. So they will now have control of the buildings. And that in and of itself is a very devious and underhanded, and frankly should be illegal, operation that they're trying to carry out. But it's even more sophisticated than that. And credit to the guys at Louder with Crowder for, you know, elucidating, or, you know, laying out how exactly this feedback loop that Zoran Mamdani has created will work to benefit socialist in New York City. Let's go to clip number 17 here. Mamdani pushes rent control so landlords can't raise rents, therefore they can't afford to maintain the property, therefore the property fails this arbitrary metric, therefore they have to sell it. They have created a process by which they can systematically basically buy up every building in New York and hand it over to their socialist cohort. Let's watch.
Control is probably the worst idea I've ever heard of. If you can't afford to live in a place, you need to move from that place most of the time. There are some instances where I get a little like, oh gosh, I feel bad for what's happening here because some nefarious actions are taking place or some kickbacks, whatever. That's different. But certainly taking property from somebody just because there's tenants that get together. I mean, I would right now I'd be like, he said maybe tenants get it. So if we all get together and just start complaining enough about
it. They
don't
even have to be true. They just have to be complaints.
Exactly.
They'd be like, my water, my heater went out, and it didn't.
Ousted. That might be great.
And this would allow these NGOs to amass tons and tons of wealth in property ownership.
Yeah.
So now they can start pushing their socialist causes.
They want it worth less, though.
They have a huge fund.
So what she said, Real Estate Empire, what she's saying is this would fund the NGOs and nonprofits.
And people like the DSA.
The Democratic Socialists of America.
So, again, force rent control, impoverish the landlords where they can't afford to fix anything, have the people complain about it, take it over by the city, give it to the NGOs. The NGOs can then not only make money with that and fund their activity through the, property that they've taken over. I seriously doubt it'll even be better than the landlord, but that's not the point. they will also then own the building and be able to get use that as collateral to get loans to do even more. It's literally they are taking over buildings and selling them to communists to progress communism. We're taken over. We're being taken over by communists. It's not actually that complicated or even novel. This is the process that has been plaguing humanity for the last 100 years, and it never works, and it's always a scam, and everything always gets significantly worse, and I don't know why people of New York can't see that. Let's go now to clip number 37, because this is another video that came out earlier this week that I've been meaning to go to. It's about Flock cameras, which are sort of the eyes and ears of the data center digital panopticon that they're creating all around us. The Flock cameras have incredible abilities that people, you know, don't know at this point, where they can identify you not even from your face, but from your gait, from your walk, from, you know, all sorts of metadata they can gather from these Flock cameras, which aren't just cameras, are also drones and speakers planted throughout American cities, all feeding a constant stream of surveillance information into the giant data centers that we're being forced to pay for with our retirement funds and tax dollars. Let's go to clip number 37 now.
And it's come to my attention that there are several Flock cameras installed around our town. My resources count over 30 of them, and I have graphics showing where they are. I'd like to be passed around to the guests here tonight so they can see where these cameras are. These cameras utilize AI to track you and your family when you're out in public. They run by a company, Palantir. This company claims that they just record movement of vehicles and they will reduce the crime rate to zero. However, people much more educated than I on these cameras have proven this to be false when speaking to their city councils. They do not monitor where you drive, but they also monitor where you walk, what you do, what you say, what's on your phone when you walk by, and they spy on you all the time. Today I walked around and I noticed the one down by the bridge was pointed towards the courtyard and the field, not towards any roads. So why would it be pointed towards the river, not towards the streets, if it's just to monitor vehicles? Also, in order to bring the crime rate down to zero, they would need to be able to predict crime before it happens. And I think that that is a slippery slope. Some cities are discussing adding this AI to police body cameras, which would be constantly monitored by an AI, which would make a judgment call about releasing drones, also controlled by this AI. Again, I see as a very slippery slope, along with the military drones that we've seen used over in Iran and in Ukraine. That is not my biggest problem with these, though. The owner of Palantir, Peter Thiel, is a man mentioned in the Epstein files over 2,200 times, making him the fourth most mentioned individual in the files. He accepted $40 million that we know about from Epstein. The victims of Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell were human sex trafficked, reported almost all members consisting of high-profile and ultra-wealthy individuals, and they witnessed murders, ritual sacrifice, and cannibalism of infants, that being the consumption of human flesh and blood. They used code words for their victims, like pizza, jerky, and grape soda. I have a hard time believing that any human being could do something so evil. This is something that I would be told in a story about vampires. And I don't know about you, but I think that vampires are meant for campfires. They are supposed to be a mythological being, and they're not supposed to be real. And definitely should not be in charge of the security and safety of our city. I believe that any decent person would say no to giving up their safety and security to someone with such little value of a human life, let alone a potential ultra-wealthy pedophilic vampire in the Epstein files.
So the gazebo's right here, right?
King stuff.
So I'm trying to capture this area where we have people hanging out.
So, I mean, he's exactly right. And you really can't undersell this. You've got the Flock cameras. You've got the data centers. They're being built out by literally the very same people that are on the Epstein lists, that are in the Epstein files. Creepy surveillance by some cities shutting down Flock cameras amid privacy concerns, but they're being picked up by corporations who are, you know, using them willingly. And of course, you already have things like the Ring camera network, which has a back door, a portal directly for law enforcement to access every Ring camera they want in real time whenever they want. The privacy aspects are an absolute nightmare. And it wouldn't even be that big of a deal if we could trust our government to do literally anything that would benefit us. And if these extraordinary surveillance powers and, constant surveillance under our skin of just absolutely everything all the time, if that was used to create a peaceful world where they were systematically and ruthlessly rounding up every violent criminal and the streets were clean and the homeless people weren't attacking us, going down the street, then I'd say, you know what? I sacrificed a little bit of privacy. In exchange, I got safety. They are forcing you. They are stealing your privacy. They're not asking you to sacrifice it. They're taking it from you, and they're giving you absolutely nothing in return. Everything is less safe. Criminals get out at a greater rate than ever before, and yet we're more surveillance and more tyranny than ever before. It's anarcho-tyranny on full blast. That's going to do it for us here on The Alex Jones Show. Stay tuned for The War Room in an hour. Jay Dyer takes over for me from here. Go to thealexjonesstore.com. Support us, and have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
Folks, I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, methylene blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go!
Gee, Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of methylene blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we?
Billy, did you know that methylene blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life. Careful, Billy. He bites. Oh. Look, vodka, potato hooch. Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow! The methylene blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc, I don't know what got into me. I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the alexjonesstore.com.
What does .com mean?
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
We need the United States economy to grow at over 2%. We need the U.S. economy to grow at 3%, especially with the growing deficits the federal government has. And so much of this money, not just the project, is going to be coming from the private sector, from savings accounts, from pension accounts, from insurance companies, on and on and on.
That's right. BlackRock CEO Larry Fink just urged everyday citizens to think about growing with the United States, framing the plunder of retirement nest eggs as some kind of patriotic duty. Fink didn't mince words about the scale of the heist. The U.S. economy must accelerate from a sluggish 2% growth to a robust 3% just to handle ballooning federal deficits. And that money is going to be coming from the private sector, savings accounts, from pension accounts, and insurance companies. He painted a picture of exploding demand for electrons powering these data behemoths.
But as the governor was talking about, the need for electrons is growing every day. If we're going to be the leader in technology, which we are, if we are going to be the leader in AI, which we presently are, it's just going to require trillions of dollars of investments. And if we don't invest in it, China will be the global leader in this.
Translation? Your 401ks and IRAs aren't safe havens anymore. They're the piggy bank for BlackRock's vision of an AI-dominated future where trillions get redirected into projects that conveniently align with the asset manager's own massive holdings in data centers and energy infrastructure.
Residents were told today that actually we're not going to provide you electricity anymore. The Nevada-based power company that is providing electricity to the residents of Lake Tahoe informed them today that, sorry, all the electricity we make, every watt of power that we generate is going to have to go to a nearby data center, and therefore you have until the end of next year to find a new source of electricity, and after that, we can't help you.
Thanks to the data center overlords, 49,000 residents, mostly on the California side of Lake Tahoe, are about to lose access to 75% of their electricity supply after May of 2027. Liberty Utilities is killing off 75% of the energy provided by NV Energy because NV Energy says it needs every megawatt for its own unprecedented data center growth. A massive international American tourist mecca packed with ski resorts, casinos, and 28 million visitors is getting squeezed by Google, Apple, Microsoft, and BlackRock. This is why we can't have nice things. Data centers already guzzled 22% of Nevada's electricity in 2024 alone and are cranking up to hit 35% by 2030 and a staggering 5,900 megawatts of demand by 2033. That's 2.8 times the entire output of the Hoover Dam.
We don't need another data center. You don't know what the health impact is. You got them all crunched together. You're going to have a mass exodus. You're going to ruin this community. You're going to ruin it. Ruin it if you let this continue.
Are you a member of a community where you've learned a data center is being proposed in your county? Have you decided to join your community in learning more about how this will impact farmland, the environment, your quality of life from the constant humming, noise, and light pollution? Are you concerned that your water may be drained by the data center or contaminated as we're seeing across the country? Well, you just might be a terrorist of some sort. According to 1,000 pages of unpublished reports from the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, and fusion centers, as reported by Wired.
The data center scam exposes the raw cynicism of the financial overlords at BlackRock, who manage trillions in ordinary Americans' hard-earned retirement funds while positioning themselves to profit handsomely from the very boom they're engineering at our expense. Fink's pitch isn't about national strength. It's a veiled demand to raid pensions for private gain, all while ordinary families foot the bill for skyrocketing energy costs, potential blackouts, and an unaccountable surveillance state powered by these AI fortresses designed to roll in the CBDC. This is how the Republic falls, one raided pension at a time.
I want to start with sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex.
This is rocket fuel. This is incredible. This is rocket fuel. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is a cocktail I drink every day. A squirt of ultramethylene blue and T3. You are insane if you don't get it. Okay. Oh, listen. You are insane if you don't get it. I am a wrecking ball. I am obsessed with this. I can't stop. And now I'm having this. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is the truth. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. You understand that? Does that burn into your brain?
I think I'm going to buy some methylene blue now.
DallasShield.com.
Welcome to the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Dane Dyer, Jason Analysis. Today we're going to be talking about a hot topic that a lot of people speculate about. There's a lot of nonsense that's out there. And I'm going to give you some insights and some data pieces that most people also may not be aware of in regard to UFOs, aliens, Nephilim,
in Genesis 6. So we're going to be talking about the text that the scriptures used, the biblical scriptural text, to talk about what happened in the fall and what happened with the fallen angels and certain types of fallen entities and angels, the watchers, and et cetera. And Alex has been talking about this pretty consistently the last several months due to the so-called UFO disclosure idea. I believe that this is largely a psyop. There's a lot of false information. But we're also going to talk about what the Bible does actually say, as well as the psyop angle as we move up into the present day. In Genesis 6, we read that it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, daughters were born to them. The sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves, all of whom they chose. And the Lord said, my spirit will not strive with man forever, for he is flesh, yet his days will be 120 years. There were giants on the earth in those days, and afterward the sons of God came into the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. These were the mighty men of old, the men of renown. And some translations talk about the giants, they talk about the Titans, and I'm going to give you some passages that you may not be aware of or you may not care about, but there are other biblical texts that actually refer to this. Now, many people probably know about Jude. The book of Jude does say that the book of Enoch contains a prophecy of Christ, and of course the entirety of the book of Enoch is about the watchers, the fallen angels, this desire that they had to leave their proper delineations and limitations as angelic beings and to try to seduce and have offspring with the daughters of men. And that led to, in part, the flood, as well as the wickedness of men on earth. So you have basically in church history and amongst the church fathers, two competing interpretations of this text. The earliest church fathers continue the Jewish tradition before them, which was the idea that it was talking about fallen angels. You have, for example, in the book of Job, the angels are called the sons of God. They meet in the heavenly divine council in the book of Job, and they have these discussions with God about ruling the universe. And so in the biblical perspective, this is called the divine council. You see this throughout the Psalms, where the angelic entities participate with God in the governance of the universe. So yes, it's true that God could rule the universe directly without any angelic hierarchies, but he also chose to not do it that way. He chose to have a choir of angels. The tradition of the church and the tradition of the Bible includes the idea of nine different choirs, right? Thrones, principalities, powers, dominions, et cetera. There's a whole ranking of these. And we have this idea that some of these angelic beings fell from their proper limitation and their proper abode, according to the book of Jude. But did you know that there's a lot of mentions, not a lot, maybe four mentions about this in what's called the Deuterocanonical text. And the Deuterocanon is the extra text that are the intertestamental books and the wisdom texts that are included in the Catholic and Orthodox Bible that are not typically in the Protestant Bible. The reason for that is a whole other issue, but the Protestant reformers wanted to go back to what they thought was the rabbinic canon, although, of course, Jesus established apostles for the church, not rabbis, and so it's actually the apostolic tradition that tells us what the canon of Scripture is for the church. And the apostles, for the most part, including St. Paul primarily, used the Deuterocanonical text. That's the Greek translation of the Old Testament. And that's known as the Septuagint. The Septuagint includes all of the Deuterocanonical texts. That's why you see many cases in the New Testament where Paul and the other apostles, and even Christ himself, they refer to and reference the Deuterocanonical texts many times over, the Book of Wisdom, the Book of Sirach, etc., Baruch. All of these texts are actually, in the Orthodox and Catholic tradition, part of the Bible. And they were used extensively by the early Christians, and that's why the rabbinic canon was a canonical decision by the 2nd, 3rd, 4th century rabbinic Jews who rejected Christianity. They said, well, the Christians are using these Deuterocanonical texts so much, we're going to not even have them in our rabbinic canon. So Protestants don't know this, but they're actually just following the rabbinic canon, not the canon of the early church. So these passages, interestingly, that the Deuterocanon utilizes refer to the giants as the titans. For example, we have in the book of Sirach, the wisdom of Sirach, it says, recounting the history of the Jews in chapter 16, verse 7, in the congregation of sinners, a fire will be kindled. An unbelieving nation and wrath shall come out. The ancient giants did not obtain pardon for their sins. They were destroyed because they trusted in their own strength. So here the fall of the wicked, the fall of Lucifer, is likened to the fall of the angels in Genesis 6, who didn't keep their proper abode and are likened to entities, or they're likened to beings that will forever be punished because of their pride. Likewise, in the book of Baruch, which is another one of the Deuterocanonical texts that is worth referencing in this regard, Baruch talks about in book 3, verse 24, Baruch says, "O Israel, the great nation, house of God, how vast are the territories he possesses. The house of Israel is great and knows no bounds. It is high and immeasurable. The titans, the giants, were born there. They were famous of old. They were great in stature and they were expert in war. However, God did not choose them to give them the way of knowledge. They perished because they didn't have wisdom. They perished through their folly." And there are other texts I'll mention as well. At the end of the book of Judith, which is kind of similar to the book of Esther or other stories that you might be familiar with if you're a Protestant. In the book of Judith, chapter 16, it says, "The Lord is almighty and he thwarted them. By the hand of a woman, their mighty man did not fall." Excuse me, but by the hand of a woman. "For their mighty man did not fall by our young men, nor did the titans or their sons strike them down, nor did giants attack them. But Judith, the daughter of Merari, who was beautiful in appearance, disabled him." So you'll notice that the destruction of this evil king in the story is likened to the destruction of the giants and their pride in terms of opposing the one true God. Because if you're familiar with the book of Enoch, and this seems to, again, be referencing texts like the Enoch tradition, in the book of Enoch, the giants and the offspring of these entities, they want to set up the rival rival interpretation of how to worship God, and they want to be worshiped. And so they begin to require things like human sacrifice. They require things like cannibalism. They require the sacrifice of the firstborn, all the things that the Levitical law will later forbid, right? When you read Leviticus, it talks about the Israelites coming into the land, and it says, when you go into the land and you see the practices of the people that are there, I want you to get rid of all that, wipe it all out, because it's an aberration. And that's because, according to this interpretation or this tradition, the idea of the demons beginning to require human sacrifice, cannibalism, all of these terrible practices that the Israelites in the Old Testament are continually tempted to fall back into. For example, in Numbers, the Israelites are tempted at Baal Peor. And Baal Peor is something very akin to what you find in modern tantrism, modern tantric Buddhism, or Crowley's philosophy, Aleister Crowley, the famous the famous Satanist. That philosophy includes the ingesting of various bodily fluids. And so at Baal Peor in the book of Numbers, the Israelites are tempted with the ingesting and the partaking of bodily fluids. Baal Peor means Lord of Open Holes, and you can figure out what kind of holes we're talking about here. So this idea of menstrual, fecal, et cetera, cannibal type ingestion isn't something that occultists or Satanists came up with. It's actually the ancient world's entire religious practice. But why? Where would this come from? Why would we get some just such a disgusting, bizarre idea for how demons or entities are to be worshipped? Well, lo and behold, according to this story, it's actually the origin of the Watchers and their inversion and the type of worship that they enact, which is intended to defile and to deface the idea of God's worship, where human beings are created in his image. And so they have an honor and a dignity. They are actually intended, according to St. Paul in the Corinthians, in the resurrection, he says, we will be raised higher than the angels. We will actually judge the angelic beings, according to St. Paul. So humans have a very high destiny in the Christian tradition, the authentic Christian tradition. This is why, for example, the Eastern Church Fathers have always said that we are actually the source of the fall because Satan was envious of man. Satan, being an angelic being, didn't feel like man should be raised to that level of power and authority in the resurrection, which was always the intention that God had. And so it's through envy that the devil fell and then sought to continually destroy and deface and bring down humanity and mankind. And so he is, of course, the angel of death for that reason. But in this tradition, we have this additional information that these sons of God who rebelled and became these imprisoned watchers and their offspring that became these entities or aberrations that began to require these inverted and degenerate practices, just because the flood happened or just because these things kind of went away for a period, the same spiritual degeneracy continues to manifest. And so all throughout the Old Testament, you have a continual temptation for the Israelites to return to these types of practices, which were originally forbidden in the book of Leviticus when it comes to the practices of the land. This also helps to explain why there was such a strong inclination to cleanse the land at that time. A lot of people think that, oh, this was unfair, it was mean. Well, it's not unfair and mean if you have these practices as the norm and these cultures need to be removed so that you can have the return of God's law being practiced, the moral law. And that's really what was going on, although the Israelites continued to fail at that endeavor. As we know throughout the entire Old Testament history, it's a story of repetitive falls and returns to the land and falls, and this cycle continues. This is the very cycle of Genesis and the fall, and then coming back to the land and being restored in a new generation. All of that cycle continues all throughout the Old Testament until it culminates in the crucifixion of the Messiah. And so Rabbinic Judaism ends up being kind of the culmination of that Antichrist spirit. And that's why the New Testament many times over calls that emerging rabbinic tradition, which even existed at the time of Jeremiah, because Jeremiah says that the scribes and the lawyers are beginning to taint and change the law. Not that the scriptures themselves were destroyed or edited, because we have ancient texts and ancient manuscripts that verify the veracity of the Bible and the Old Testament, but rather the tradition that was emerging amongst the rabbis and the Pharisees. That is the tradition that we have in rabbinic Judaism to this day. That is why Judaism is, much like Islam, ultimately very antithetical to the Christian tradition. Now, Judaism is a little more openly antithetical to Christianity. Islam gives the impression that it's friendly to Christians and people of the book, but that's actually not true, because if you read other sections of the Quran, Muslims are also told to wipe out idolaters, and the Trinity is considered to be an idolatrous doctrine. So there's no real friendship or alliance there, though many Muslims sort of pretend that that's the case. But it's also the case with rabbinic Judaism as well. Rabbinic Judaism is also, as many of you probably know, Talmudic. And ultimately, it's not a Bible-based religion. It's an oral Talmudic tradition-based religion, which puts the Talmudic tradition up and above in the lens through which you interpret the divine revelation of the Old Testament. So once you understand that, that's why it doesn't make any sense to talk about Judeo-Christian, because that'd be like saying the Islamo-Christian tradition. It doesn't make any sense. It's a religion that's set up in antithesis to the fundamentals of Christian theology. It's the same with rabbinic Judaism as well. So this idea that, well, you got to choose between Zionism or between Islam is all retarded. It's all preposterous. They're both wrong. And that's the whole reason why Christianity exists, as the continuation of the true Hebrew tradition. In the Christian view, the Old Testament is proto-Christian, right? The Hebrew tradition is a proto-Christian tradition. It's not the same thing as the later 4th, 5th, 6th century rabbinic codification, which was itself defined in antithesis to Christianity at that time. So when we understand these things, a lot of this begins to make more sense, and then it begins to make no sense as to why we would follow John Hagee and these kinds of, Huckabee and all these weirdos who have absolutely no idea about Christian tradition and history and actual biblical theology. They're really just indoctrinated into a Christian Zionism. But that's not today's topic. I want to get back to Genesis 6 and the aliens. And so when we get into the early church fathers period, the first and second century church fathers tend to agree with the already existing Jewish tradition at that time. And by Jewish tradition, I mean, generally speaking, not just talking about the rabbinic tradition, because these are emerging traditions that are beginning to part ways in the first, second, and third century. So the early church fathers like St. Justin Martyr and people like Irenaeus, they would tend to favor this view that, yeah, it's definitely talking about aberrant offspring from the fallen angels. But by the time you get to St. Augustine and other, third, fourth, fifth century church fathers, there begins to be more of a skeptical attitude towards this. Now, of course, we couldn't say that St. Augustine is some sort of a rationalist, because he also talks in many places about incubi and succubi in the City of God. So it's not like he was just a scientific skeptic about the attitude towards Genesis 6, but he began to think that, well, maybe Genesis 6 is just talking about the righteous sons of Abel, and not talking about angelic beings, right? So sons of God there being the Christians or the proto-Christians of that time, the believers of that time, who were tempted to intermarry with unbelieving pagan women. And so in that sense, it's reinterpreted and revised to mean, like Paul says, don't marry an unbeliever if you can avoid that, right? He advises against that. But that's very late in the game, right, when that begins to be questioned. And then that tradition becomes more and more normative in the Middle Ages. I think probably in the Latin West, I'm just going from memory, but that probably becomes the dominant in the Latin West. It's never really addressed in a dogmatic way, I don't think, by the Eastern or the Western tradition. It's just kind of left kind of unknown, because we don't really have a whole lot of information on that, although I did point out the four deuterocanonical texts, which can shed some light on that. In regard to the Book of Enoch, I would just say that in the Orthodox tradition, for example, there's no problem with there being true oral tradition outside of the written canonical texts. So, for example, in the Orthodox tradition, we have an appreciation of the Proto-Evangelium of James, which has a tradition about Mary as the Theotokos and other ideas about her, even though it's not part of the strict biblical canon. And this is because the New Testament has many places where we're told that the apostles taught the word of God. In many places, we don't know what that was. Paul taught in Ephesus for 3 years, day and night. We don't have a written record of all the things that he taught, but he tells Timothy in the letters to Timothy to pass on that oral tradition to people that he would then lay hands on after him. So that body of teaching, that catechesis that Paul gave, he instructs Timothy to also pass all that on. But we only have two letters of Paul to Timothy at Ephesus. So there's a tradition, we would say, that is still there. And there's nothing inherently bad about it being oral. God was able to preserve the oral tradition from Adam to Moses. So there's no reason why he can't still preserve oral teaching and oral tradition. In fact, in 2 Thessalonians, Paul enjoins the church of Thessaloniki to pass on the traditions that he taught, whether oral or written. So we have a standing command to continue to do that in the churches. And the Orthodox Church, of course, believes that, as does the Catholic Church as well. So point being here, the New Testament texts that refer to tradition can also be a little more flexible when it comes to these other books that have been continuously mentioned, not just the Book of Enoch, but other books like the Book of Jasher, or the Book of the Wars of the Lord. Some of those we don't have. They've been lost to history, but they're referred to within the scriptures as genuine traditions. And so there's a less hardline view than perhaps Protestant, classical Protestants or evangelicals have about the limitations of the canon of scripture. And so the canon of scripture was determined many centuries later in the 6th and 7th century of the history of the church, not in the 1st and 2nd century. And if you read about the history of the canon, you'll begin to understand that. You could read Lee MacDonald's book, Formation of the Biblical Canon. You could read F.F. Bruce's book, the canon of scripture, and those are evangelical Protestants that are admitting a lot of these points that I'm giving you when it comes to the canon itself. Now, to get back to the watchers and the angels, the Book of Enoch can have true traditions and true ideas within it, and thus it can be referenced in the Book of Jude, and it doesn't have to be within the biblical canon, right? Because there's a certain status or tier that being included within the canon carries with it. And even within the canon, we have a level of importance, right? The deuterocanonical texts, hence why they're called a secondary canon, they're not as important as the Gospels. Doesn't mean that they're wrong or that they're evil or false. It just means that they're not the highest of importance in a tier. And that's why in the liturgy, whether Catholic or Orthodox, the Gospels are always given a preeminent place even above the Pauline epistles. Doesn't mean Paul's teaching false. It just means that that it's a more important text. So likewise, outside of the canonical tradition, there can be actual traditions, things like what's in the book of Jude, what's in the book of Enoch, cited in the book of Jude, and it can still be true. And so it's entirely plausible to hold to the angel thesis. And if we have that thesis and we look at the book of Daniel when it talks about the watchers who have this certain role of being angelic beings that are instructed to kind of govern over certain nations and certain areas and whatnot, we have this story within Daniel of Gabriel having to interact with another angelic being. And there was a spiritual sort of warfare going on between the prince of Persia, not an actual human being, but presumably an angelic entity or a fallen angelic entity that Gabriel had to interact with. And we see this, of course, throughout the Old Testament as well. There's many places where we're told that when the fall happened, many of the nations fell under the governance of some of these fallen angelic beings. And so the gospel, when it goes out in the New Testament, becomes a period of the conquering of the nations, spiritually speaking, to the religion and worship of Christ, right? So this warfare, God is a man of war, so to speak, where Christ is going forth conquering, not necessarily with like physical, tanks and horses, but conquering through the preaching of the gospel, right? The sword that proceeds from his mouth is the preaching of the gospel. And it spiritually conquers the nations such that the demonic entities under which the nations had fallen, in terms of worshiping idolatry, the idolatrous worship that all the nations fell into, that is being destroyed in this spiritual battle through the catechesis and the baptizing of the nations and bringing them into the church, which has been happening for 2,000 years. So if we think about this, we could begin to place the alien story of today within this structure of a spiritual cosmic battle. This is the Alex Jones Show, and I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis.
When Barack Obama's birth certificate came out, and I went to the government website, I downloaded the birth certificate, I put it into Adobe Photoshop, I separated the layers, and I thought, this is crazy. They released a fake birth certificate. I didn't need somebody to tell me that. I didn't read somebody say that and just believe it on trust of them. I did it myself. I saw it with my own eyes. I did it with my own hands. And then I tell my friend, he's like, you know that's racist, right? I'm like, what? No, I just did it. And they're like, you know, it's like a racist conspiracy theory, right? You're like, what? What is going on? So if you've experienced that, the reason is some people do not have the chemical balance to handle things like that. You need a lot of testosterone to handle things like that. You need to have your mind not warped and distorted by the dopamine feedback loop that social media is designed to create in your brain to enforce you into the pre-established, preordained, approved of mindset. So if you're here, you probably already are winning the chemical war over your own body, but that's why we sell the supplements that we do. Pretty much everybody takes up. Who doesn't take vitamins? Who doesn't supplement in some way or another? Who doesn't add a protein scoop when they get a smoothie at the store or take vitamin D or vitamin C or fish oil, you know, before bed or, you know, when you wake up? Isn't a crazy thing. This isn't an out there woo-woo type of thing. Everybody takes supplements. Everybody I know takes supplements. And if you're not, you should be. And so all we do is get the best supplements on the market, white label them. And so you get them from us, you're probably getting a better price than at the store. And you're absolutely getting the best possible quality of all of these products. If you're here for the first time and don't know why you would support us, because you get the information for free, because the streams are free, because there's no obligation for you to support us, that's all part of the strategy. The fact is, we're able to keep this free because you go to thealexjonesstore.com. Put this information into action. You have to understand the attack on humanity itself and then fight back against it in two different ways. One, by advocating and trying to seize power politically to change things from the top down. But while that's going on, you've got to be protecting yourself against this stuff. and we have a lot of supplements and vitamins and minerals and merchandise for you to do exactly that. Things like Atomic Defense, Methylene Blue, Methylene Red. These things are extremely powerful and combat exactly the type of poisons that we talk about on a continual basis. So I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not making claims here. I'm not saying it's going to, you know, cure any diseases or anything. But I'm saying that in the modern world, it's microplastics and, you know, atrazine and herbicides and growth hormones and fluoride that they put in the water on purpose because they want you dumb. You have to combat these things. You have to be protecting yourself and building up your internal shield so you can even handle the information that we're bringing to you. And that really is a thing. Testosterone, the higher your testosterone is, the more likely you are to go against the grain, to reject the herd mentality of the crowd and instead pursue justice or pursue the truth, regardless of who says anything about it. And there's a chemical balance that has to be achieved there. But that's why there's such an attempt to lower your IQ, lower your testosterone, lower your masculinity, lower your self-sufficiency, lower your self-confidence. Because they want you a tired, weak, overwhelmed, overworked slave. That's what the people in power have designed this world to do to you. And you don't have to take it. You can fight back. You can protect yourself. You can reverse the effects of the damage that's done to your body as it is to all of our bodies by going to the Alex Jones store and getting a product.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis, and we are discussing the placement of the idea of the fallen angelic beings in the cosmic scope of the history of the world and the battle between the forces of good and evil, the fallen angelic beings and the human beings that are aligned with them versus the people of God and those that are aligned with the sons of God and Christ, the man of war. Speaking of that, Father Stephen DeYoung, I noticed, was just on Tucker, and he's written several books that are really good in this regard. They were talking about Genesis 6 and the Nephilim, so this actually providentially all tied in really well. And he's got some good books that cover this, including The Religion of the Apostles, which is a good book that I'm reading right now. I recommend that. But as we move up into the modern era, as we see these phenomena begin to really pop off, the so-called alien UFO phenomenon, the abductions and the entities and whatnot. One of the first things that I remember noticing when I began to study this phenomenon, I would say back in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, read a whole bunch of books on UFOs and alien abductions and what exactly is going on in this phenomena. And one of the first books that I came across was actually a Protestant evangelical guy who wrote a really good book in, I want to say, the late 90s. And, 2004, excuse me. And it's called Alien Intrusion. And in this book, Gary Bates posits the thesis that the alien story, the alien mythos, is curiously very close to the sort of New World Order evolutionary atheist mythos. It's almost like a kind of a metaphysical religious replacement mythology to replace the idea of biblical religion with something akin to we are the offspring of the gods. We've been seeded here by the aliens, and the ancient aliens are actually coming back to farm us and genetically experiment on us, and really just a bunch of nonsense that matches up very closely with the atheistic, Darwinistic, social Darwinist type of message, which perfectly plays into the technocratic New World Order elite plans to have a global government, a culling of the population, a mass disarmament, one world government, one world, religion, all of those things just happen to be the message that the aliens and the, ancient aliens and the visitors and whatever you want to call it, the interdimensional beings. Well, that's always what they want. Why are they always saying what happens to be the global elite message, right? We got to cut the population. We got to corral everybody into smart cities. We got to control everything. We got to disarm. Right. We got to get rid of guns. Like, that's literally what the aliens are always telling us. And this was some of the first propaganda in early alien movies that Hollywood was putting out. If you go back and watch The Day the Earth Stood Still, you'll notice that that was actually consulted on by the OSS and CIA. People like C.D. Jackson, others were involved in producing these films that would teach scientific socialism against the idea of nation states and having arms, right? So they had a disarmament message that only through a United Nations style socialist world government could we ever overcome warfare, which is preposterous because, I mean, socialism and Marxism are actually the sources of most of the 20th century's warfare. Atheism, Marxism, socialism dominate the destruction and the chaos of the 20th century, but somehow these are going to be the savior solution, you know, models for how to overcome global warfare and to create global peace. But Gary Bates noted a long time ago that this was also presenting a kind of a false gospel. Another interesting text that I read over many years, studying this phenomena was something that you might not expect. And this ties into a lengthy live stream that we did last night. My wife and I, we covered the history of tantrism and tantric Buddhism. And you might think, well, what does that have to do with aliens and this sort of nonsense? Well, it turns out the idea of the gods and the visitation of the deities and entities on chariots and whatnot, in many cases in the ancient and pagan world, that was accompanied by or facilitated by very powerful drugs, very powerful hallucinogens, whether it's ancient, whether it's shamanic tribes using Ibogaine or whatever, or using entheogens. All of this oftentimes would occur through the shaman going into the other dimensions and interacting with the deities, the entities that come and visit in chariots, as the Bhagavad Gita says, or they come and visit in these ships that are described by, you know, like flying airships that the shaman would describe on his journeys or his vision quest to the other side. And in many of those stories, the shaman would describe a kind of ritual dismemberment that he would undergo. So to be initiated into the shamanic tradition, this is, by the way, is almost global. There's a great book by, I think it's Mircea Eliade, the religious scholar, famous Romanian religious scholar, who wrote a book on shamanism and the whole history of shamanism. And he was noting that all across the world in these disparate cultures, there's a commonality to the ritual initiation journey that the shaman undergoes when he's on these very powerful hallucinogens. And there's a death, burial, resurrection process. But what often happens is when he dies or when he goes into the spiritual realm, the gods or the interdimensional entities actually dismember him and consume him. And then in some cases, he sort of vomited back up into being a resurrected new being. And so when he comes out of the trip, out of the shamanic journey or the shamanic process, he's been ritually initiated into being resurrected. And now he has his third sight. He has his higher eye, his third eye opened. This is very common, again, all throughout the world. Why would there be this common death, burial, dismemberment, and then resurrection motif if there wasn't something to this idea? But this is a kind of dark demonic initiation. And what's interesting is that when you cover that, when you look into that, and then you look into the tendency of what people describe in alien abduction scenarios, or compare that with sleep paralysis experiments or experiences that people have, or when you compare that to ritual abuse cases, SRA, that kind of stuff, and when you look at MK Ultra, well, lo and behold, there just tends to be a lot of these commonalities. But what a lot of people don't know is that some of that, or much of that, comes out of things like the tantric Tibetan Buddhist experience, because Tibetan Buddhism is not just about yoga chicks and yoga pants and Instagram. It's actually about the denigration of the self in order to achieve enlightenment through undergoing the left-hand path, right? So when you hear about this in the occult world of the left-hand path and the right-hand path, that actually comes out of things like Tibetan Buddhism and these hermetic, Eastern hermetic traditions. Amongst the tantric tradition, you have the idea that the woman is a battery that has to have her life force sucked out of her, and she must then be discarded and denigrated. And they also have within that tradition a very prevalent use of younger people, if you catch my drift. This helps to explain why we see the Dalai Lama slurping on kids, as Theo Vaughn said. Why would that exist? Well, in that tradition, you have to negate and destroy the self. You have to engage in all the most horrendous practices, everything from cannibalism to incest, in order to overcome the attachments and the desires to become above good and evil, right? And in that process, there are many cases where you're meeting the deities, you're interacting with the deities, right? This is, again, part of the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. And I realize that, like, other normal Buddhism is different from the Tibetan tradition, but this is relevant for America and for the West, because the Eastern ideas that have so much, that have so penetrated the West, whether it's yoga or tantra or whatever, this was actually engineered and fostered by very wealthy and elite people. I'm not just talking about people like Helena Blavatsky, but the other people at the UN as well, Alice Bailey, Annie Besant, and particularly Blavatsky, because she's one of the pioneers of pushing yoga and meditation in the West, which was formerly seen as something, you know, confined to India and places like that. But it was designed to come into the West because there was a guy at the 1895, I think it's 1895, Chicago's World Fair named Swami Vivekananda. And he taught a religion of introducing the West to yoga, meditation, kundalini, because all the religions are the same and they're all manifestations of the one, Atman, Brahman, et cetera. And so Jesus, yeah, he's cool, but he's just one of the many deities out there. And there was a famous person named Granddaddy Rockefeller who was very enamored with this message of Swami Vivekananda, not so much because he himself was spiritually moved. He was a teetotaler Baptist, but he understood that, wait a minute, this could actually be very, very beneficial to oligarchical designs. A religion where everybody accepts all the religions is the ultimate perfect religion. And if a powerful oligarchic wealthy elite could control and steer that, that would be a way to actually unify all the churches and all the religions into a controlled fake religion, the supra religion, right? The mega church. I don't just mean the Joel Osteen mega church. I mean the mega church of all the churches and all the religions of them as a manifestation of the one. That is the lie of Hinduism that this elite family explicitly puts in their authorized biography, which I've been covering for the first time I ever called in Alex Jones in 2007. I called in to talk about that. I said, I've been reading the Rockefeller's biography and they talk about wanting to create a one world religion that's an ecumenist secretist extravaganza. And this is based on what he was taught by Swami Vivekananda at the Chicago World's Fair. And this births the modern ecumenist movement and the World Council of Churches, National Council of Churches idea, which is all a Rockefeller funded thing, to create and to unify all the churches under the false banner of all the religions are essentially the same. They're all just gradations and tiers of manifestations of the one. And so we get this false religion that's being promoted, which is, I would say right now, kind of a proto false one world religion that will emerge. What exactly that will look like? Will it be Chrislam? Will it be sort of Judaic? Will it be New Age? Will it be Hindu? It remains to be seen exactly what direction that will go when we get towards the end times, whenever that is. But regardless, we know that there are oligarchical designs behind this. And in fact, many of the mouthpieces like H.G. Wells of these elites of this Royal Society, Fabian Socialist type elite, they wrote books saying the type of religion that they would concoct. H.G. Wells has a book called God, the Invisible King, where he says that the future religion is not atheism. It's a kind of scientific, scientism based Luciferianism. He says it will be the worship of Lucifer. You have similar types of statements amongst many New Agers and others, and even Aleister Crowley himself, who was a huge fan of Madame Blavatsky. In fact, he would direct his devotees to read Madame Blavatsky, and her philosophy is what underlies modern public schooling. She was very influential in that. It's the philosophy at the Lucis Trust of the United Nations. It's the philosophy and the idea of theosophy that's promoted throughout a lot of the West. And again, she really introduced yoga to the West. But what people don't realize is that the real secrets of yoga are actually Well, let's just put it bluntly. It's a lot of the same types of sexual practices that Crowley talked about. But in the case of Tantric Buddhism, it's all about not actually releasing in the woman or in the person. It's actually about just holding that in and retaining all of that as you suck in the energy of the woman and become a powerful mystic. Right. So, it's really bizarre stuff, but you could tell, well, wait a minute. That's exactly the type of stuff that's in Numbers at, when the Israelites are at Baal Peor. Yeah. And where does that all come from? It's the demonic inverted rituals and religion that the demons and the fallen angels have been promoting and entrapping human beings with for millennia. It's the exact same. And what's a better explanation for this? That human beings just have a tendency to get degenerate. But why that? It's just the grossest stuff that you could think of. Well, doesn't it make a lot of sense if there's actually spiritual beings and entities that promote these types of practices? Now, to go back to Tibetan Buddhism, many years ago, I covered the Psychonauts in a lot of their books, and particularly Timothy Leary, right? Timothy Leary was, of course, putting out and promoting LSD on behalf of the CIA by design for many years, and he really helped to kick off the 1960s countercultural revolution. In fact, he takes credit for this in many YouTube videos that you can look up. And he also says that he believed that he was continuing the work of Aleister Crowley. He was a devotee of Crowleyanism, and you could debate how deep or how serious he was into all that, but his depths of LSD obsession and having done LSD so many, I think he died on his deathbed. He was tripping, right? But he wrote a book that a lot of people are not aware of called The Psychedelic Experience, and how it's a manual of traversing this vision quest based on the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And in this book, Leary theorizes, I've read a bunch of Timothy Leary, by the way, and I've also had bad acid trips and good acid trips. And by good, I mean that it wasn't, it wasn't a bad one. Not promoting it, but I'm saying, so I'm familiar with the psychedelic experience. I've done it firsthand. I understand what's going on. And when you read a lot of these books, you will notice that as well. Leary is basically saying that the psychonaut, the person who's done the trips many times and who then studies the Tibetan Book of the Dead, can actually use this as a manual to be like a shaman, to control and to initiate people into the vision quest and into the psychedelic experience. In other words, you become a kind of a handler. You can become a guru. It's a manual kind of in becoming a guru and initiating people through the Tibetan Book of the Dead experience. Now, again, notice the pattern here. You're going to lead people through a ritual initiation process. The LSD experience is very potent, very powerful. And you're going to be taking them through this death, burial, resurrection journey. I don't even remember there is a resurrection journey here. But for Timothy Leary, he says, this is a way to teach you to be a shamanic initiator and how to lead people through this journey to, in a sense, resurrect by becoming enlightened out of this journey, right? But what happens in this journey is that you will encounter things that many other Satanists and other religious practitioners like Aleister Crowley talk about. For example, you will reach the abyss. You will cross the void of the abyss. And eventually you will come to greater and greater levels of enlightenment as you pass through these phases of the beyond, to become beyond distinction, to realize that you are one with all. You eventually will be embraced in a kind of blinding white light, which I would say, you know, Paul says Lucifer appears as an angel of light. I would not say that this is the uncreated light of God. It's the created light of Lucifer, which dupes a lot of people. And he says that all this really will lead you into understanding that the gods and the devils that you will encounter are actually the same thing as the aliens that people are describing today. So it was actually Timothy Leary basing himself on Crowleyan ideas. And there's books like Weston's book on Aleister Crowley and the occult, where there's whole chapters that Crowley's whole ethos, Crowley's whole idea of lamb or the deity that he thought he was encountering. If you've probably seen Lamb, he's that guy that looks like a gray. It's one of the earliest depictions of an alien. He looks just like the aliens of today. And Crowley talked about that 100 years ago. You'll notice that extraterrestrial gnosis is essentially what's going on in the Crowleyan tradition. And here you have the popularizer of Crowley in the 1960s to all the boomers. They didn't even realize they were being initiated in a Crowleyan initiation. All the boomers participating in the counterculture revolution that thought they were getting free from the system, man. Oh, I'm not a slave to the man, man. Meanwhile, you're really just undergoing the same thing that every pagan religion has ever done for millennia. Right? So the psychedelic experience is what? Aliens. It's about contacting and interacting with aliens. And the gods and the demons of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, according to Leary, are aliens. And Leary himself says, hey, it's just like an alien abduction. When you undergo the Tibetan Book of the Dead acid trip under me as your guru shaman, guess what? It's the same as alien abduction stories. What people describe who think that they're being abducted by aliens or whatever's happening, it's the exact same as the demons that you're encountering. And he even calls them demons. He's like, yeah, you're going to see demons. You're going to see spirits. You're going to see all this kind of stuff. And he even says that, yeah, they're probably going to cannibalize you and eat you. He says at a certain point when you get into the journey, he calls it the third bardo, the period of reentry, Sidpa bardo, the cannibal gods or demons will arrive. They will rip your skin off and eat it. But don't worry about it, dude. It's just part of the initiation. And then after you've been dismembered and ingested and destroyed and vomited back up, like I said about the shamanic tradition, you will become empty, non-being, and the void. You become the void. And then there's a whole poem, which if I recall is part of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, where you are the void. And I think Agent Dale Cooper in Twin Peaks even sources and cites this, by the way. So the light that you experience is the light of the void. It's the dark light of the dark enlightenment. And it's a kind of evil apophaticism where you become totally negated and become non-being. And then you are reborn as an empty vessel to be a more pure manifestation of the one. You're basically to be possessed is the goal here, right? It's not about being a manifestation of some generic one. It's actually about these entities stepping into you and becoming the thing that drives you. That's what Timothy Leary describes the LSD experience truly as. That's the true spiritual underlying LSD experience, according to Tim Leary. And again, these are people who completely revolutionized all of Western culture through the 1960s boomer counterculture experiments, right? And they were not doing it for fun. They were doing it because they were devotees of Aleister Crowley and because they were intent on completely revolutionizing the West into a new aeon or a new era. And it's intimately tied up with the alien UFO experience. The Crowleyans tend to identify the beings and the gods that you're contacting with aliens, ETs, and UFOs explicitly over and over and over in their texts. Again, the whole idea of a gray, the little gray alien with the big eyes and the tiny chin and the big head, it's exactly parallel to Crowley's deity called Lamb that he was supposedly channeling. And who was Lamb? Lamb is supposedly a llama, a ascended master Himalayan llama that Crowley thought he was, it's just a demonic entity. But another one of the psychonauts who was instrumental in the MKUltra projects, the guy who had a weird sexual fascination with dolphins, Dr. John C. Lilly, who wrote about dosing children with LSD and reprogramming them in his book, Programming and Metaprogramming in the Human Biocomputer. Well, in his biography, John C. Lilly, The Scientist's Metaphysical Autobiography. Guess who wrote the introduction? Oh, it's Timothy Leary. Timothy Leary wrote the introduction and said, what we're doing with MKUltra and LSD is bringing in a new Aleister Crowley era, a new aeon. And then John C. Lilly himself, after describing things like implantable microchips and that they were doing this as part of naval research in the 1950s, they were doing this in the 1940s and 50s. There's a whole page on ELF, VLF, frequency manipulation studies that he was involved in. They were putting chips in monkey brains a long time ago. Here's a whole thing, studying the brain waves, the Lilly wave. When they put the chips in monkeys, they probably put it in humans too. It wasn't just monkeys, but monkeys. Then he talks about the conferences that he would have. He would take high doses of, I want to say all kinds of drugs. I want to say like ketamine, LSD, you name it. And he would do the float tanks, right? So he would go in the float tanks. There's a whole chapter on this. And he would be super dosed up and he would have concourse with the beings who would give him information and ideas about technology. And it just so happens that he thinks and calls them ETs and aliens. He thinks he was talking to aliens. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer. Now, go to my channel on YouTube, Jay Dyer. Go to the Alex Jones store and get those products. Go to jaysanalysis.com in the shop and buy my books, signed copies of Esoteric Hollywood 1, 2, and 3.
Folks, I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, methylene blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go!
Gee, Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of methylene blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we?
Billy, did you know that methylene blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life. Careful, Billy. He bites. Oh. Look, vodka, potato hooch. Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow, the methylene blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc, I don't know what got into me. I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the alexjonesstore.com.
What does .com mean?
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.